This is something that happened to me. I got scheduled to do a comedy show, stand-up comedy, at this roadside, like, trucker bar off a highway in the middle of nowhere, dude. I don't... when I pulled in, you ever, like, get a feel about a business? There's, like, a first impression. It could be anything, but for this one, it was... There were weeds too high around the sidewalk beside the building, and I was like, they don't care about this place. No one cares. Immediately. Yeah. Now, the whole outside of it's painted orange. You can see it from outer space. It's got neon lights on the outside. It looks like a nightclub in the middle of nowhere. But once I was on the inside, there were four people in there. They all worked there, so they didn't care if I was there or not. This is their job. And only one person sat in the crowd for four comedians, and we dared him to leave. His name was Tanner. He was real sweet. I don't think politically he was into any of our jokes, but he was nice enough to laugh and sip his PBRs, and we love him. So, but that was, it was a very, very painful night because I was 2 hours away from my house. I went 2 hours to make Tanner laugh. I was like, dude, I got podcasts you can download at home. Yeah, neither of us needed to be here, to be honest.
I mean, that's tough for you. Kudos for you for going through with it because, you know, playing to a crowd of one, it's not easy.
Oh,
but you also got to give it up, give your props to Tanner, right? When the first guy starts and he looks around and realizes it's empty seats on both sides other than just him, between the first guy and the second guy, how do you not just fake like you have to go take a poop,
right?
And then linger and then sneak out through a back door or something. I couldn't stay in the audience for that.
I know, man. And so there's the host. One comedian did 10 minutes, one did 15. Then I was next. And I could feel him getting antsy. He was looking at his phone. He'd already kind of finished a beer. And as soon as I went up, I was like, you cannot leave. I called him out. I was like, there's a comedian after me, then we're done. You got 30 minutes. Sit still. You're also going to be all the crowd work. Like, yeah. Anytime I have anybody done this, I'm looking right at you for the answer. So he was into it, man. I still got paid. I ain't mad about it. It was just, sometimes you get those.
He's a good guy. All right, we give it up for Tanner. And now, you know, you already set your record now for the fewest people that showed up to a show. So now you're just working on setting the opposite record for the most people to show up to a show, and you're all set.
That's right. That came – 3 was the lowest. He broke the record for 3 down to 1. It can't get worse than that because if no one shows up, we'll just sit around and chat as comedians. We don't need an audience at that point. But anyway – you know what, Steve, you know what I'm thankful for? The audience that we bring here for Polykill. We have more than 3, which is great. Yeah. And I love them all. So folks, this is the Polykill podcast that you're listening to. And it's where Steve and I get together every couple of weeks and we just talk about our gaming habits and how life gets in the way. And I think what's neat about that, Steve, is that, I've been doing this podcast now for goddamn almost 8 years. And I think, if anybody that went back to the original and listened, you can hear a lot of things happen throughout my life.
Yeah.
Got a kid, got married, lost parents, switched jobs, all that stuff. But the podcast has remained constant. The gaming's remained constant. You got a kid in the past year.
It's true.
I mean, things change, but I think that's neat. So, at some point we can look back on this as sort of a... Oh, this is just a living journal of our life.
That's why I pretty much do everything on the internet, is to just be able to 15 years from now go back and look at it and be like, what was I up to in 2019 or whatever
dude.
It is. So, yeah, I'm here for it, man. It's good stuff. Yeah. So thank you for listening. All the Tanners out there.
Oh, Tanner.
This one's for you, Tanner. All right.
That's right, dude. This Tanner, he didn't look like he listened to many podcasts. He's one of those guys that just always has a retroreflective vest on because he never knows when he might work in the dark. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. His lifestyle probably isn't podcasting, listening, but it could be. So, Tanner, if you're out there, wild that you found me because I never told you about this, but that's awesome.
Kudos.
Steve, we're talking. You brought up an interesting thing. You said, you've been sort of logging things on the internet, gaming habits and such specifically for a while. I mean, if we were to pick a random date, would you be able to go back and see like if a game beaten or something that you picked up on any given day? Is that how detailed you got it?
It depends on when the date is. It's kind of a sore subject because if you go back through 2018, I can pretty much tell you what game I beat on or around a given day. But for a long time, I had the entire history of my collection of my beats and everything I bought and added and finished in Backloggery. But at some point in like the late 2010s, they had like something with server space issues and they had to restrict everyone's history to like 500 entries, which right. means that for me, I kind of have like a rolling history now in Backloggery of like 2.5 years or so at the rate that I beat and buy things. So there is a chunk earlier than 2018 that is kind of lost to me, which is unfortunate.
Well, that could be a fun little segment we do here, just a quick, like, throw out a date, see what game you beat close to that date. So do you have what you beat close to April 14th of 2018?
Yeah, let's go find out. All right.
Because I got mine pulled up here, and I finished on April 15th of 2018, Final Fight Double Impact on the Xbox 360, a game I have zero memory of.
Don't you love that? Don't you love that? I love any of the moments where I'm at a game store and I'm like, I should pick that up. Do I already have that? And I look it up and I've already finished it. Like I played it and beat it and own it. And it's like, oh God, something's wrong. So
the thing about that one is if you ask me if it existed, I probably couldn't give you an answer. The fact that I've already played it and beaten it and apparently own it is insane to me.
Yeah. You said April 18th?
April 14th. Well, you know, today. 14th. Today, okay. Some 6 years ago, yeah.
Closest to the 14th was an April 18th date in 2018. So that was when I finished Moss on the PlayStation VR for the first time. I was in a pretty hot PSVR kind of mode right there. I just played The American Dream and The Inpatient. Astrobot was a little earlier that year. So I'd clearly just gotten my headset and I was kind of making good use of it. And Moss was one of the better games I played. So
does it feel like 6 years ago?
Dude, it does not.
Right.
I the most boomer thing about me, like the most like embarrassing, I'm going to get scammed on Facebook aspect of my personality is when people say the unironic ones. Like, can you believe that the Nintendo 3DS is 11 years old? It actually works on me. I'm like, "Holy shit, 11 years? Goddamn, what a fact."
It's like we're closer to Cleopatra's death than we are the release of the 3DS. It's like, wow, really?
Oh my God. So, yeah, it's painful. It's painful to hear and to see how rapidly time shoots by. The last one of those that got me was when I played through Firewatch just recently, and I was like, God damn, this game's almost a decade old. And it feels like a relatively newish indie.
It's insane, man. It's a sign we're getting older when time speeds up. Before you know it, we'll be dead. Isn't that exciting? All right. Games that are coming soon. April 16th through April 30th. The rest of the month. What's happening the rest of this here month? Steve, you got a couple here. Why don't you make a sandwich out of my coming soons?
I'm about to butter up this bread, buddy. Now, I'm excited for this one because I feel like it has been a long time coming. We're finally seeing the official release of Yuden? Why don't you hit me with your best guess pronunciation on that?
I feel like if I say it, it has to sound like a fighting character's special attack, like Yuden!
Yeah, we're going to go with that. Yuden Chronicle 100 Heroes, which is the modern equivalent spiritual successor to the Suikoden series of RPGs. So this is just like a Bloodstained situation where one or some of the creative talent behind that series split off, I think did a Kickstarter, decided I want to make that game again, but I don't own the IP, so I'm going to make this very, you know, non-copyright infringing, you know, Dr. Thunder type soda, and you're gonna guzzle it down. So
Mansoor Pib.
Yeah, it was announced so long. Mansoor Pib was announced so long ago, and we've been waiting with bated breath to let that carbonation at the back of our throats. No, it's been a long time coming. So much so that they even released like I don't even know the details of it, but there was a game that came out called Yoiden Chronicle Rising, which was like a prequel game that played kind of different. I think it was more action focused. So a whole damn game in this imaginary series that hasn't even started yet already came out before this actual one did. But we're here now, and it's coming out, and it looks great, and everyone should play it. So it's coming out on the modern systems and Xbox One, PlayStation 5, XS, and PC. So anyone but a Switch pervert or a PS4 pervert can enjoy this game.
All right. Well, that rules me right out. Yeah. That's cool, though. All right. So I have one here that, you know, I should be interested in. It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Arcade Wrath of the Mutants. And Steve deleted it from the sheet. He was like, I've had enough of it. I actually
every now and
like
again, you X when you meant to see, baby. These things happen in life.
But it's a reimagining of the classic arcade. It's called Wrath of the Mutants. It's bringing the 2012 iteration of the Turtles, the Nickelodeon Turtles, to the forefront. I don't jive with that art style very much. And to me, in video game form, it just looks like a game that should have come out in 2009. But I'm sure it's fun. I'm sure it's great. I'm sure a younger generation of Turtles fan is into it. I'm not knocking it. I'm sharing it here for other Turtles fans to enjoy. I don't think it's specifically for me. I like my 80s art style or my 03 Turtles art style. But I am excited for the Ronin movie that's coming out very soon. That's going to be, That's some good Turtles in right there. But if you're interested in this Wrath of the Mutants, if you're a Nickelodeon era Turtles fan and you have a PS5 and Xbox Series XS, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, or PC, you're in good shape, because on April 23rd, you can get your hands on it, and you can you and three other Turtle friends can get down.
Do you think this is really me showing that I'm out of touch with the youth? Are there really big enthusiast fans of this era of Ninja Turtles? Like, are there like early 20 somethings right now that would go to bat at, that this is the definitive, like,
yeah,
turtle?
As a grown man who is subscribed to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles subreddit, it is a constant ageist war between.
Okay. I didn't realize there was so much drama.
It is because most of the posts are just asking which iteration you like, and it's just, it restarts a war every 3 days. We don't need it to happen, but someone new will be like, oh, I just joined the subreddit, which is your favorite Turtles? And then you open up the comments and it's just bedlam.
Because I was going to say, looking at screenshots, this looks like the type of game that I would find at a garage sale and have to politely tell someone that I don't want to pay $5 for it, but I would pay $1 for it. But well, maybe that's just me showing which side I'd enlist with.
And that's my attitude toward it, too, because I feel like that iteration of Turtles was spun out. They did market it a lot, and it felt very oversaturated to the point that I got tired of seeing it. Just, you know, everything in Target and every, you know, anywhere you went, the Nickelodeon branded Turtles were everywhere. And it just started to feel like shovelware for a lot of the systems back in the day. Now, I still collect a lot of those games because Turtles is Turtles to me, but it was never my favorite iteration. I got kind of sick of the look. It looks a little lazy to me. I like the hand-drawn stuff and the whatever. It's just not for me.
I promise we won't just do a Turtles cast this entire time, but I do got to ask. You kind of alluded to recently that you're sort of collecting Turtles games. Are you going for the full Turtles set? Have you committed to that yet? And is that Nickelodeon era Turtles inclusive?
Yeah, I think those count. And I think it's a fine thing to collect because there's only like one that is hard. Well, I guess two, the Game Boy Turtles 3 is pricey, but I have that one. So the big one that I don't have is on the NES, the Tournament Fighters. That's a pricey boy. But the rest of them are fairly attainable. They were mass marketed. I mean, it's a huge toy marketing. You know, there's no rarity.
There's a ton of them. That's a smart idea, though. Create a cross section of two different collecting goals to make it easier to justify spending money on Tournament Fighters. There you go.
That's true. Yeah,
I like how this guy operates. All right. One more that I'm excited for, and I actually can't speak too intelligently about the property. This is sort of like I have my reasons to be excited, and I'm even more than my reasons, I'm kind of secondhand excited for other people that I know have a bigger connection to this property. But the Sandland game that was announced, I want to say about a year ago at this point, is releasing. This is looks like kind of an open world action RPG based on the manga series by the late great Akira Toriyama. So he was alive when this game was announced, and I think a lot of people maybe are, you know, looking back at his work and appreciating like how kind of widespread and influential he was. And this is one of the last, I think, new property or not new properties, but one of the last new games that are going to come out that he had a direct hand in and was involved in the creation. So if you have an appreciation for that Toriyama, you know, Dragon Ball style art, I think Sandland looks pretty freaking cool. And it's probably one of those that's not going to get too much love, unfortunately, in terms of like sales, because I just don't think a ton of people know Sandland in the West, at least. But who knows? Hopefully it turns out to be pretty freaking cool.
I did watch the trailer for it because I was like, what is this? And it looked awesome, but I just don't know the source material. So I was like, well, maybe I need that to enjoy this. You know, I'm never really sure about those things, if I should be taking in the source material to actually appreciate the video game or if it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I was kind of same way for me where I haven't yet, but the announcement of this game actually put buying like an omnibus of the manga series onto my wish list more than this actual game. I was like, you know, next time I happen to be sitting, you know, in a Whole Foods that's next to a Barnes and Noble, I'll walk over to that Barnes and Noble and see if Sandland's over there. Why not? You know,
why not?
Let's do this thing.
So, yeah. Cool, man. Yeah. Yeah. It did look really cool. Like the trailer, like people in this, like a Mad Max style adventure, and there's monsters in the background and a dude driving a Jeep through the desert. I was like, hell yeah, this looks awesome.
Yeah, looks really freaking cool. So I hope everyone out there is excited for it. Like, I know, you know, friend of the show, Ari Lewis 2011, he's going to pick it up right away. I know he's a big fan. And I got a couple other people online that I know will tell me for sure if it's good. But for those who are unaware, it's coming out on the 5, the XS, the 4, and PC on the 26th.
Very cool. All right, folks. So there's 3 decent games for you. So you should be pretty satiated the next couple of weeks on video games. Actually, there's a ton of video games coming out, a lot of remasters and stuff we didn't even cover here. So be sure to, you know, check out your local Game Informer list to see if anything appeals to you. I do want to point out at the end of the show, we're going to be doing a top 5 one button or less games ranking, thanks to an email from our pal Burger Champ. That's later in the show. But first, Kevin has to put us right in the hot seat. You know, it's what he loves to do. And he's good at it. He's starting us off pretty weak tonight. He's throwing us an underhanded one. It's almost like he gets it. Like, it's hard to keep coming up with hot seat questions.
It really is.
It's tough.
This would be a weekly show if we didn't have to think of hot seat questions. The entire second week is dedicated to coming up with these things.
Oh, 100%. I don't even play games that second week. It's just all homework. But he starts us off here. What is the best salad dressing? Now, Steve, I don't even know. Do you have salad? Do you salad it up? I don't know.
Is that a personal insult or a cultural insult? I want to know what. Are you making fun of Minnesotans or are you making fun of me, Steve? I'd like to know where you're coming from.
It's interesting because I feel like anytime. Like, I don't know your salad preference, but I remember one time walking into a cereal question where you were like, ooh, gross, all things dairy. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that about you. And then another time, I don't know, you catch me off guard with things that are just like hard no's. So I was like, I could see salad dressing being a thing where he's like, no, I don't do salad dressing. I just a little bit of warm water for me. That's all I do.
Okay, you're actually not as wrong as you think, but you are wrong and insulting. So... First off, let's knock a couple of them out. You know, Italian dressing, ass. Thousand Island dressing, ass. Most other dressings, ass. There's one dressing that I used to have a reverence for, which is ranch. But you go through your ranch era when you're like 15, 16, you grow out of ranch at some point. You're like, I can do a little bit better than that. So at this point, I'm also not a vinaigrette guy, so I really am the kind of guy that doesn't like salad dressings in general, but I do have one, which is one that I make myself, and any salad I ever eat, I eat the most medium amount of salad. Like, I would say a salad hits my plate on average 2 times a week, I would say.
That's not bad. You know,
when I'm looking to just fill a little veg next to my protein. And my go-to dressing is you take a scoop of hummus, and you mix in a little olive oil and a little bit of water just to, you know, some degoopify it a bit, you know, give it a little bit more runniness. Maybe sprinkle a little pepper in there. and then mix all that up and dump that over your salad. Mmm. The best homemade dressing you'll ever eat.
It's the whitest thing I've ever heard anybody say. I like a good Italian. I like a good zesty Italian. I like that. I like a good vinaigrette. Just put some oil and vinegar on it. I don't give a shit.
I just don't like the mayonnaise. Oil's good.
Yeah. I don't like the Thousand Island. I think we could come together on that and just say, let's get that out of here. We don't need that on Earth.
We don't need that at all. I'll give it up for, we go to a crepe place every so often, which is, you know, I don't want to brag about how upper middle class I am that I eat crepes on the regular, but
there's no crepe place in my state, so.
there's one in mine, so I go there. And I always get a beef stroganoff crepe. Oh, it's so good. And fucked up now that I'm saying it out loud, but that's okay. And it comes with a salad that has like a lemon oil dressing on it. Ooh, I like a little lemon on my salad. That I can get down with.
I like a little zest myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff. And this is an important question to Kevin. He's a salad pervert. That's really all I've ever seen him eat. So this is, I don't even know what he's into. I don't know what he eats as dressing. Probably just a little bit of warm water.
All right.
So his next question here, you're in the swamp of sadness and your best friend.
How'd you know?
Yeah. It's because we just had to talk about salad for 5 minutes. That makes you sad. Yeah. You're in the swamp of sadness and your best friend, who is a horse, starts sinking into the sadness mud of death. We can tell what movie he ripped this off of. What do you say to cheer him up so he doesn't die? What do you say to your horse? Have you seen The NeverEnding Story, Steve?
A long time ago.
Critical point in the story. Sad horse makes everything sad.
Yeah.
But if you had to cheer up your horse so that he didn't die, what are you doing for your boy? What are you saying to your best friend, your horchacho?
I kind of take issue with the entire premise of the question. He says, what do you say to cheer him up so he doesn't die? So is he asking me to come up with like a thoughts and prayers that is so powerful that it raises the horse out of the quicksand?
Well, it's the swamp of sadness, you know. It's got to, what, you know, his sadness is what's sinking him down. He's got to get right in the head to get lifted out.
So a pep talk literally is the solution to his problem.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd probably really cheese it up and hit him with something like a, what do you say we hoof it on out of here?
There you go. See, he might get into that. Yeah. I might just comment on, like, dude, you're a horse. It's a swell dog, you know?
Yeah. I know it's under the sand right now. You can't see it, but trust me.
I've seen a ton of horse dongs in my day. I was subscribed to the newsletter for years. And honestly, yours, impeccable. That's got to get him going, right? That's got to get him.
Oh, man. I think he's rising right up. All right,
I think so, yeah, in a couple ways. All right, let's move on from that. And now, this is this last one. I don't know. Kevin was in a mood when he wrote these. He says, the darkness is coming. All right, the end of all things is here. You can see the great fireball of calamity heading towards your doorstep, and you have 15 minutes to play one last game. What is it? Tick-tock, little rabbit, what will it be? What will the game be that you play for your last 15 minutes on Earth?
Kind of like Kev calling me a little rabbit, all right?
I don't know what that was all about.
I'm assuming that I have to play this game. Like, I can't just opt out and, like, hug my loved ones. I do have to play a video game.
I think that's the parameter, yeah.
All right, I accept that. God, I only have 15 minutes to play one game. Well, it's probably, honestly, you got to probably go with Majora's Mask, right? Like, just have the experience of the Ball of Calamity and the moon sort of lining up next to one another and experience in the virtual world what I'm experiencing in the real world, sort of dissociate a little bit from it.
That's good. Thematically, that makes a whole lot of sense. I like it. I think you did well. I think I'm going to... Oh, this has got to be... Okay. I'm going to get Guitar Hero 3.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I'm just going to play Number of the Beast and Raining Blood in quick succession back and forth until it's all over. You know? Really just seal my fate there. Maybe
That's
one Mississippi Queen, just for old time's sake, but then back to Raining Blood again.
I would go with that plan, and then I'd realize I haven't played Guitar Hero in years, and I would just like fail in the first 4% of the song. And the last thing that people saw was me tripping and falling flat on my face. So,
hey, man, that's okay.
Yeah,
because everyone's going to die. So what are they going to do?
True.
All right, Kevin, I hope you're happy with all that. And outside of the salad dressing question, I think you need therapy. But that's a different podcast and conversation. Folks, if you'd like to alleviate Kevin while he does spend a long stint in therapy, you can send hot seats to us. We'd be interested in you asking us questions, too. Kevin's doing it out of the goodness of his heart. He's not paid for this. He wasn't asked to do it. He just likes contributing to the show. And we know that you do because you send us all kinds of beat tweets. So if you got some fun questions, toss them at that email address, polykillpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll throw them into a hat. And we'd like to use them here on the show because, like Steve said, it's hard to keep coming up with these after 4 years of being on a podcast, especially because you and I try not to ask gaming-related questions when we do each other's because we speak so much about it. And that's all we ever talk about. So it's hard to ask other questions.
It is. And it's also impossible to remember what ones I've already asked.
100%.
Like, you'd think that you could just keep coming up with new things and interesting questions, but at some point you're like, oh, so would you rather, 5 seconds in the electric chair, get your wiener cut off, and you realize you've already asked that twice. So
right. Yeah, and it's an electric chair every single time.
Yeah, I need to cook that brat.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, we're keeping the wiener, which is a t-shirt. That's a new t-shirt, keeping the wiener. Actually, might be the title of the episode. Let me write it down as a candidate. Speaking of wiener, what are you playing now?
All right, speaking of wieners, I got one that I popped in and checked out. You know, I went a little turbo graphics-y, and a game that I've been meaning to play for a long time is Newtopia. It was actually it was between two games, okay? I was going to either play Final Lap Twin or I was going to play Newtopia. But Newtopia is kind of where I was like leaning more towards. I was like, you know what? I looked up and I was like, big man, give me a reason to play Newtopia. You know what? Tell me what the bingo square is. And I was like, you know what? I bet that son of a bitch Snestrunk has talked about this game. And I went and I looked it up. And the reason I thought that is because I remembered his like 3-week-old video. It's not really that old at all.
Right. He's been on that TG16 kick. Good time.
I watched his video and I was like, all right, is it still worth playing today? Because that's going to help me out. I have never seen a man ride the line so hard. The line is freaking chafed in that video. He never once, every positive, you get a negative. Every compliment is hedged. Every insult is lifted up with a little bit of slight praise. You leave it and you're like, is it worth playing today? I have no idea. So we're just going to assume it is.
One's a lot better, right? But it's the first one that's very derivative, and I think that's what he has issue with.
Yeah, it's tough. Everyone's opinion on Newtopia seems to be the same. You know, I went scouring for people I trust. You know, I also wandered over to our friend Hungry Gorilla's video and watched that. Same thing. She's like, it's fun, but it's also not that fun. I enjoyed it, but not the whole time. But it's not bad. I'm like, okay, all right, everyone, calm down. And I get
sounds
why.
Like a perfect game for us. That's a good 5 out of 10.
I literally 3 out of 5 had the time of my life, right? Like that's what we're living. And so I popped in, I ended up playing about halfway through it on stream. And I get where people are coming from because it's a Zelda-like. How is there not a word for these yet? Like a Zelda clone, it is one of those. You have a sword, you go into dungeons, you're collecting 8 widgets to combine them to ultimately go face a great evil, that type of thing. But it really is like a Zelda that you sort of like stripped all the trappings off the side of, or like, it is kind of like, it's like a sheet cake that you haven't like put the kid's name on yet. It's like just good. Like, yeah, it's just good solid cake. It's delicious. But I understand that people are looking for a little more pizzazz, a little more razzle dazzle. I played it and I was like, I don't know, guys, this game's kind of good. What the hell are you talking about? Like, let's be real. Who are you trying to impress? So I got, halfway through, enjoyed my time with it quite a bit, although I did then proceed to immediately not play it for a week and a half, so I don't really know what that tells you. I just got distracted by other stuff, but I think I'll see it through, you know? I think we'll maybe be able to put it into that square. We'll see. Again, someone could tell me if I can't. Come down, make a definitive statement. That's all we ask. But yeah, Newtopia is pretty cool. I would say worth checking out if you're a TurboGrafx pervert, for sure.
And I forget, is this one getting pretty pricey, the hard copy? They're all pretty pricey, but even among the TG16s, where does it land?
I was going to say, graded on the TurboGrafx curve, it's pretty affordable. I think you can get an in-case copy for under $100. So.
Okay.
And I also think this is one of those games that was available in the TurboGrafx Mini, if you happen to catch one of those. But also, I think those are ridiculously expensive at this point, too, if you didn't already buy one. So you might be better off just buying a copy of Newtopia. But yeah, it's pretty cool, and it does make me want to check out the second one. Fortunately, that one's a lot harder to come by, but we'll get it eventually.
Yeah, play it any way you can, you know.
Anyway, yeah.
All right, very cool. I've been interested in that one as well. So I'm eager to hear your thoughts at the very end. See what you think.
Yeah. You know, maybe it'll be your first ever NES friend TurboGrafx review. That would really help me out square wise.
I have so many games that I've covered. You could pick one of the other ones that I've already done. I think would be
it's
easier.
Either that or I'm going to have to play Pinball Quest. It's up to you. All right.
Gross. I do hope you do. I hope you beat it. I want to see it die. I want you to beat it. I want to see the end.
Yeah.
I've tried it twice, and both times I wanted to kill myself. All right. But games that don't make me kill myself. Child of Light. I'm really enjoying that one. That's the little turn-based RPG on the Vita. And the way that I kind of play the Vita is just sort of in between, like, a little bit, you know, in the morning when I have a little bit of time, and then a little bit in the evening between, like, dinner and putting my kid to bed. So I'm getting, like, 15-minute spurts at a whack.
Yeah.
But it's a good game for it because it's the overworld, if you can call it that, is very linear. And you are just doing turn-based battles, so it's not, like, a huge thing to, like, you know, have to deal with. You can jump in and out pretty easily. And I'm liking it. I still don't give a shit about the story. It is like all in rhymes. Like anytime they do a cutscene, it's people rhyming verses. And I get so caught up in how certain words don't rhyme that I just don't take in what they're saying. I'm just mad that like again and therein barely rhyme, but then you get to things like again and oh man. And I'm like, well, you're saying it different the other time then, because it's not everything. That's weird. And then I forget what they said because I'm mad. But I really like it. I'm at the part of the game now where it's really starting to like, which I like in an RPG where it kind of takes it lets go of your hand and lets you run on your own. And it's like, all right, now you got four characters and you've got three different enemies and you're going to have to kind of strategize because you only get two characters to play with at a time, but you can swap a party member in and out mid battle and you're not punished for it with time or anything. You don't lose a turn. So it's just up to you to kind of figure out like what's the best person to use here in this particular predicament. And I'm having a lot of fun. I think Child of Light is, going to sneak up and be one of, you know, a good favorite of the year.
Nice. That's saying a lot for an RPG that you're ignoring the story in, right? Like, that's pretty high praise for all of the, like, design, mechanical complexity, whatever, art style, all the other components that go into a game.
Yeah, I mean, the art style is great. It's unique.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's very, you know, it's painted and whimsical. And, again, the story... It lost me, you're right. But I'm one of those RPG gamers that other RPG players hate, where I'm like, the story is about third on the list for me in terms of enjoyment. Like, if the story is great, that helps the experience. But I think I do like the whatever addictiveness the mechanic throws in there, or just that, like, whether it be loot or a level up system, like, what can I get if I keep moving up and getting better? And I'm less worried about, like, the calamity, because I know they all kind of end with the world's going to be done. So I might as well just keep on beating up bad guys, I guess. The story's not convincing me. I'm not motivated. I'm not like, well, maybe I should take my time because this bad guy doesn't seem that bad. Like, it's never that.
Yeah. Kind of with you. I'm the same way. One of my positions that I have the hardest time defending, but do feel truly and deeply in my heart, is that turn-based RPG combat is good and grinding also can be good. And so, anyone that comes at you, I'm like, I don't know. That's just how I feel. Shut up. Go away.
Yeah, grinding is great. If you got a good podcast or some good YouTube to catch up on, bro,
yeah,
that's,
man, again, just let me chew on it a little bit, all right? Yeah, I just want to feel something in my mouth. I don't care if the gums lost a little flavor.
Nice, yeah. Also, the battle mechanic in this game, like you, I think it was Granda you were talking about, was time-based.
Mm-hmm.
This is like that, too. And that's another thing that's very addictive about it. I love getting the battles. So I'm actually, in a lot of games, I get annoyed by battles because I'm like, just let me take 8 more steps on average. Jesus.
Yeah.
But this game, I'm like looking for bad guys. I'm like, bring it. I want to get back in there and throw some fists. So it's a good time.
So you're playing that on Vita, right?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, let me transition to another Vita game then. So for folks that were paying attention, a couple of weeks ago, friends of the show, Weedo, Podomax, and Scotch and Hobbies made a great parody episode
of IndieQuest.
Yeah, bunch of hooligans out here.
Hooligans.
Chuckleheads released an episode of a podcast they called In the Quest, and they did a mock play on our IQ OST episodes that we do over on IndieQuest. So they just brought some great indie game music and basically talked shit about us for an hour and a half. It was a great episode. I had a lot of fun listening to it. Everyone should go check it out. It's on YouTube. Check it out on Podomax's YouTube channel.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put that in the show notes. I'm going to remind myself to do that.
Thank you. Please do. And so on that episode, our boy, Scotch and Hobbies, brought a song from the game Riddled Corpses on Vita, which is a game that I'm familiar with. And it was great. It's a banger. And I was like, okay. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to play that game because he said the game was fun. I trust Scotch. You know, he wallows around in the 99 cent muck from time to time.
I
trust the truffles that pig comes out with.
Yeah, he's our little piggy. Yeah.
Yeah, he is. And so I was like, I own that game. I'm pretty sure that was a limited run game at some point. So I know I have that over on the Vita shelf. I walked over there. No, I don't have Riddled Corpses. I think Riddled Corpses was released by Play Asia and I didn't buy it. So I was disappointed, but I caught Xenon Valkyrie sitting on my Vita shelf, which is by the same developer. And so I was like, well, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound, I guess we're playing Xenon Valkyrie. And it doesn't hurt that it starts with the letter X.
Bingo.
So I popped that in, started playing it, and whew. All right. It is a rogue. I'm honestly going to sound like I'm talking about everyone else talking about Newtopia when I talk about this game. It's a roguelike. It's like a 2D action roguelike. You have a sword and a gun, and you're navigating these levels that are procedurally generated, but in big chunks. And you do 2 or 3 levels, and then you fight a boss, 2 or 3 levels, and you fight a boss, you know, very roguelikey. And it plays pretty well. Your character's pretty small, and it's pretty zoomed out. It reminds me kind of like a, maybe like the scale or the feel of Terraria, if anyone's ever played Terraria.
I was just about to say, I just pulled up a gameplay video. Terraria was about to come out of my mouth. That's perfect. Yeah. I think it's a good analog.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with like that gameplay style, that's how it plays.
Also, not to interrupt you again, but also a little bit like, what's the game that I like that's on the second one, the Metroidvania, it starts with an A,
Alabaster.
No.
Aggro Craig.
It's
Anelico.
Come on. Metroid. I've derailed this conversation.
Alder Lilies.
No, what is that game? I love it so much. We cannot move on from this until I find. I'm very sorry. I hate that I'm doing this to you.
I don't know. Is it Ape Escape?
No, it's
not. Did you find a roguelike Ape Escape or a gated exploration Ape Escape that I've never played?
I'm scrolling down. I've got my list of A's here. I'm scrolling. Axiom Verge 2. It looks like Axiom Verge 2. It looks a lot like that. I found it.
So none of mine then were right. Okay. Yeah. Yes, it does kind of look like Axiom.
Thank you.
Verge 2. That was worth it.
I'm so sorry. Anyway, as you were saying some 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. And so, as you know, as you attack enemies, as you progress their levels, you level up. You get experience and level up pretty fast. Every level has like a mini boss. That mini boss will drop a key, which you can then put into a treasure chest that will randomly give you a weapon. And yeah, I mean, it's sort of like if you take that picture that we've painted and apply a roguelike lens to it, you'll basically kind of understand the loop of this game. The problem with Xenon Valkyrie is it's a roguelike that actually is kind of punishing you for, like, its progression mechanics. So when you think of roguelike, you think of, I make, you know, as far into it as I can get, and then I have some meta currency that I can use to upgrade in some way or make future runs easier, and eventually I will have snowballed enough to beat the game.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. There's only two, like, true progression, like, meta layer things happening in this game. The first one is there's a shop. There is a currency that you get that is the only currency that you keep upon death. And there's a shop where you can buy weapons. And I thought, oh, nice. These are, like, stronger starting weapons so that I start at a better place and I'll snowball and I'll be stronger from the outset. But all those weapons do is when you buy a weapon from the shop, that weapon you just bought becomes a potential weapon in a treasure chest during one of your runs. But the problem is, like, it's not any better than the weapons that you already could have gotten at the start of the game. And there's a table of, like, dozens of weapons. So I played this game for, like, 4 hours, and I opened dozens of treasure chests, and I have still never seen any weapon I've bought from the shop ever. So that's not really particularly helpful.
No.
And the other thing that you can unlock, and this seems like kind of like the more considerate option at first, is you unlock, basically, if you make it through an area and beat the boss and you have, like, a healthy amount of currency that you didn't spend, usually there's kind of three currencies and usually it'll require two of them. So basically, if you kind of, like, skipped one round of, like, upgrades or, you know, did pretty well and didn't need to buy potions, you'll usually have enough currency to then buy or to pay the services of someone who will repair a teleporter that will teleport you from the start of the game right to that phase. So it's kind of like you can skip the first three levels in the first boss. The problem is when you jump ahead, they do give you some levels to, like, even up your stats, mm-hmm. but they give you, like, 40% of the levels that you would have earned by playing through up to that point. So you enter in at about half the stat, like, growth that you should have, and still with that stupid base weapon that is ridiculously weak now. And so you start so weak in the area that you teleport to that it's not worth it. I'll die 2 out of 3 runs just jumping ahead. I would have been better off just starting everyone from the beginning and going forward again.
That's not good.
It's not. And then the last thing on top of all that is, it performs like garbo, like poo-poo. It is. there's these like flamethrowers that'll be in the ceiling sometimes. I don't know what it is about these goddamn flamethrowers, dude. These must be the nicest flamethrowers you've ever seen in your life, because the rest of the game will run totally fine. You get 2 of these flamethrowers on screen blowing flame at the same time. Dude, ground to a halt. And when I say ground to a halt, you're like, you're thinking, oh, frame drops from 30 down to 20. I'm legitimately talking down to single digit, like 2 frames a second. There's a clown enemy that shoots a spray of bullets, like 12 bullets in an arc over his head. And he could be the only thing on screen, just me and the clown, mono e clono. And he'll unleash his spray of bullets and the game will freeze for 2 seconds while it processes. And then one frame until the bullets get off screen, and then it, like, slowly returns to the appropriate speed. So it becomes this weird game of, like, I get into an area and I look around, I'm like, all right, I got to get to those 2 flamethrowers before they shoot any flame, otherwise I'm gonna die.
Right. This game sounds like ass.
It's one of those, it's a solid, like, maybe 2.5 to 3 out of 5. And then that stuff drags, especially the performance, drags her down to like a 2 out of 5, which is that's just not a place I like to be. That's the swamp of sadness right there.
That is. You're losing a horse on that one. That's a goodbye horse.
At the end of the day, dude, I need an X game, so we're not giving up. We're going to keep going. I got what I believe to be 2/3 of the way through on a run and felt like, okay, I could probably do those first 2 areas pretty competently in the future. So I think I can string together 1 successful one run and call it a day. So see how it goes.
Man. So that Xenon Valkyrie. And I see in the thing that I looked up here, it says Xenon Valkyrie Plus. Is there one non plus? Is one have better performance maybe, or is it just part of the title?
I read a Reddit thread about this from Cowcat Games, which is the studio that ported it to Vita, which is a different person than developed the game, but they seem to have a very close working relationship. And just right out loud in this Reddit AMA, they said, we called it Plus because the we released first on PC is just Xenon Valkyrie, and the game was received so poorly that we wanted to basically change the name. They added Plus so it like is like a new SKU when they brought it to other platforms to suggest to people, like, this is a different game or an improved game over the one that you already hate. Which, I don't know. There's nothing about this game that you should really hate. It's not the type of game that you hate. It's just the type of game that, like, it just is. You know what? It just,
I don't like that deceptive maneuver. I'll say that.
Yeah, it's a little nasty, but it is what it is. When you read about this game online, everyone talks about it very affectionately. Well, moderately affectionately. And I think it's just no one played it on Vita, and the PS4 version probably just runs great.
Oh, okay.
And so I kind of feel like the lone man on an island that's like, why is, like, there's a lot of reviews for this game. They're like 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10s. And I'm like, we're not going to talk. No one's going to mention the frame rate at all in any of these reviews. So just me. Okay. All right. Well, it is what it is. I would imagine Riddled Corpses is probably the better game, and I still will check that out at some point. So I'm not saying that, you know, my pig didn't still recommend a good truffle. I wandered off of his suggestion and found myself in the swamp of sadness.
Yeah, you got in worse mud somehow, but that's, hey man, that happens sometimes. You got to play them to figure them out, you know, and sometimes they're not all winners. Yeah. They're not all winners.
Nah.
So that's Xenon Valkyrie Plus, which is apparently the same as just regular Xenon Valkyrie. Interesting. All right. Well, for me, remember the other night I popped into your stream and he was like, you know, we gave each other the old what's up. And I was like, man, I'm just having trouble trying to figure out a game to play, man. I had just wrapped up a big one that we'll get to later. And I was kind of left in that, you know, that point of like, what am I feeling? I don't want the same thing I just beat. And sometimes I like to do a different system. I don't like to do a same game on the same system twice in a row if it's a big one. I want to move on, you know, not that I'm moving anywhere. I'm sitting in the same chair.
But controller in your hand, though. You know,
yeah, right? That's what it's all about. I decided, you know what doesn't get enough love in my house? And I think a lot of the reason for that is because my Wii games, I have them in a different room. I have them in my office along with my Switch games. I have an extra little shelf in here with them in there. And I don't see them when I'm ready to play a game because that's, you know, it's not in my game room.
Yeah.
But I decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play a little bit of Elebits. Have you heard of this game? Have you heard of this? This Elebits? Oh, have you heard about
it? Oh, yeah. I've seen it. I've heard about it. I know all about that great little Elebits game.
Oh, it is great. Have you played it?
No.
Okay.
But I own it.
It's very neat. Yeah. And this was, you know, not too long ago, I did my thing that you do this as well. You go through the video game library YouTube channel there, watch what they got going on. And sometimes I'll put games on my wish list there. And I might correlate that to like a ratings list of games that people really like, maybe some hidden gems. And this one keeps popping up, you know. And I saw it with my own eyes and thought it looked cool. And so Elebits is a game, you know, using your pointer, your Wiimote pointer. You're in a 3D world, you're in a space, you're usually in a house. The whole premise is you're like a little girl and something happened and these little doodads that charge up light and energy or electricity, they get loose and you gotta get them. And they're just like these little blue things and you gotta point your Wiimote at the screen there and try to zap them. And as you zap them, you get more wattage, you know, you get more electricity. And so you start getting, maybe you get to 200 watts, right? And it's like, all right, now you can turn on the vacuum cleaner. So you got to go through the house, you got to find the vacuum cleaner, you turn that son of a bitch on. And when you turn it on, different colored little Elebits jump out. And these things are like, you know, they're just little things that run around. You got to chase them, you can move furniture and you want to zap them, right? And then you get the yellow ones, they charge up your power. So like things you can lift. So at first you can't even lift a fucking can of beans. But the more of those yellow ones you get, you can start lifting stuff around the house. So that it kind of has a Katamari vibe where you eventually roll through enough of a level. By the end of it, you can pick up the bed. You can pick up, you know, large tables and stuff to move around to look for more of these little bastards. And each level is timed. So you get, you know, maybe 10, 12 minutes to go through and get a certain number of them, a certain number or wattage. And then the more you go, each level has like a little a constraint. Like you can't make but so much noise, right? They have like a little meter. So if you're looking for them, you know, you can't like be knocking too much stuff off the table. You can't go through it thrashing all willy-nilly. you got to be kind of careful, you know, you got to do it that way. Or some of them is like, it's a room full of vases and it's like, you can't break more than six vases looking for these things. So you got to carefully set them down on the ground and look around. And so it's got a nice little twists. I think graphically it looks great, especially for the Wii and of the era. Plays great. It's a lot of fun. It's super addictive. Like, I don't feel, if I get to the end of a 10 to 12 minute run of a room and I didn't get it, I don't feel, it's not like, ugh, I got to do this 10 to 12 minutes again. It's like, oh, sweet. I get more fun of thrashing a room around looking for little blue chicken nuggets that are bouncing all over the place. Like, it's really, nice. It's cute and fun. It's good. You know, I haven't played a game quite so cute in a while. So I got Child of Light and Elebits. I mean, look at me. I'm a new guy.
Yeah, you are. You know what? You're just playful. You're the cotton candy of gamers, bud.
Oh, dude, I am. Elebits. I recommend it, folks. Get yourself a Wii. Get yourself some Elebits. And I think it's got a sequel, if I'm not mistaken.
Does it really?
I might have made that up.
Dude, I hope it does. One that I've been meaning to play for a long time. That was one of those games where, even for the Wii, that game I feel like got really cheap really fast. And so for years, I would see it for $2, $3. And at some point, I was like, dude, I gotta just have this. Like, I gotta just have Elebits, all right? And it's sat on the shelf for 10 years ever since that point. So now you're making me think maybe I need to dust off Elebits.
Dude, you should. I think it's a lot of fun. That's a great, I don't know if you've ever streamed Wii. You should, though. It's good.
Dude, maybe I will. Maybe I'll waggle online. You know what?
Do it, man. And I just looked it up. There is an Elebits, but it's on the DS and it's very different. Very different experience. Same franchise, but it's like, okay. You know, top-down action game.
Again. Hell yeah, man. Again, I was saying this in the last episode, too, but this is what you come here for. As someone who's recommending and legitimately enjoying Elebits in 2024, the year of our Lord. Thank you.
Hell yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, and there's going to be some more, like, Trav games coming, but...
Dude, no. The new Trav game is Elebits, all right? Let's redefine you, okay?
Actually, another reason that I started playing this was because my kid... Her name is Ella, and I told her I had this game, and she was like, we should play it. So I showed it to her, and she thought it was super fun, too, because, I mean, how ridiculous is it to, like, just pick up a bed and throw it across the room and look for a little blue guy? It's fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's also, a little tease for, you know, 5 minutes from now. I scrolled down. He's not wrong. There's some Trav-ass games coming up. that is quite the Trav-ass list. Okay. Well, last game, I'm still trucking away on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Dude, I kind of feel like they gave me the business here. So I'm looking at 80 hours on the clock in this game, and I'm pretty far. Now, I don't want to brag, but I have played Final Fantasy VII Original in the past. So I know the general beats and the general flow of the story. I know I'm getting close to the end because I know where this game cuts off, and I know where I am, and I know that there's not that much gap in between. Plus, I started getting... This is how you know, all right? You know, I've been doing all the side quests in the open world as I go along, and at some point in the game... Even if you don't really have a good sense of how far into the game you are, you start getting those trophies that are like, do all of the Moogle Emporium side quests. Do all of the Chocobo side quests. I'm like, if I'm closing the book on these different types of side quests, I'm clearly coming close to the end because there's not going to be, you know, much more open world. What a lie that was. Because then right when I like cleared out all the open worlds, they basically were like, hey, you should go in that direction. Something important is going to happen. You know what it is. And I was like, all right, I'll go in that direction. They're like, but before you go, we have opened up literally a dozen new side quests all across the world and added hard mode to every one of the dozens of mini games you've already played. So if you could just putz for another 20 hours before you go there, that would be great.
And you're a trophy pervert. What are you thinking?
Dude, I don't... On one hand, I'm not going for all the trophies in this game for sure, because this is one of those things. I'm here to tell you now, people. If your game demands that I do two playthroughs of a game back to back to get all the trophies, it's not going to happen. All right. I'm not going to finish 120 hours of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and say, hell yeah, let's play it for 80 more hours on hard new game plus. No, I'm going to save that for 10 years from now when I'm feeling nostalgic about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I'm going to hope that my save data still exists in whatever cloud is out there, and then I'll try to close the book on it that way. But functionally, that doesn't even matter because I have come so far in terms of doing all these side quests where I'm like, I mean, I might as well. I've already put 60 hours into these things. What's another 15? So we'll see what I end up doing. We'll see how hard they are and if I fall off. But we're getting close. All that to say, we're getting close, and that game refuses to just chill. It refuses to just stop. It just keeps going.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's what we all wish Pringles did, right? Once you pop, you can't stop, and it's like, maybe put more in here then, you know? Would it kill Pringles to have like just a 3-foot-long can? I don't think so. That'd be fun novelty. Maybe add more. But that's kind of where you're at. You're at a 3-foot-long Pringles can, and you're just begging for it to be kind of over. Yeah. But you've had fun.
Yeah, I'm still enjoying it. Still a great game, you know? Still tons to love. Incredible characters, one of the best soundtracks of all time. Combat system, super fun. I'm not bored of any of it. I'm just, it's more like the audacity. How dare you guys? Just be done.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess for us, and I think people that listen to this podcast, we're a type of gamer where we like games. We like a multitude of games, and we feel the pressure of other games always. And it's like, I can enjoy this, and if it were the only game I had, I'd probably enjoy it longer, but it's not. I gotta go. I've had fun. I gotta go. It's like going to visit your grandma when you got to go do something later that night, and you hate to say it. You're like, I love you, grandma, but we gotta get going. The concert starts at 8, and I love you. No, I know this could be the last time I see you. Yeah, I get that. You're old, but we gotta go.
It's true. And we're uniquely positioned to have it hard because. You know, there's people out there, like you said, that just, they're like, hell yeah, I buy 3 games a year. I want it to be 200 hours long. Let's go. There's also plenty of people out there that, even other people on other gaming podcasts, I would say most other people on most other gaming podcasts are cool to just like play 20 hours of it and be like, all right, I got my fill. I'm good. I'm going to move on.
Right.
But it's like, we're uniquely positioned where I'm like, no, I want to beat the 100-hour game. I just also want to beat other games too. So give me more time in the day.
Exactly.
It's not fair, but I'm still liking it. Still awesome. Great game. Hopefully, maybe next time we'll have it in the credits section. Maybe.
This was a conversation last time where I asked if you thought it'd be wrapped up by next time, and you said maybe, but this time you're like, maybe. You're like a little more confident.
I'm hitting you with a double maybe. Yeah, double maybe for sure. Yeah.
All right. Very cool, man. Well, good luck with that. So we started a new game, Briz and I did. We got those Spooker Dookers going, and... You know, he got to pick this time. He did. We do home and home. You know, last time it was at my house. We did Resident Evil Zero. We're at his place, and he springs this on me because you know you heard me last episode. You asked. You said what Resident Evils you got left in that mainline?
Yeah.
I told you. I said I got a sore spot with 4. I'm ashamed I hadn't gotten to it yet. 5, which is kind of like I don't think people are really mad at you about that one, and then Code Veronica, which is hard and I'm scared of it. So. I go over to his house, and he's like, he doesn't tell me ahead of time. He goes, maybe by the time you get here, I'll figure out what game we're going to play. And I think he's hedging. I think he knows. I think he wants to surprise me. I walk in. He fires up that brand new, Resident Evil 4, the redoozle there, the old remake.
Oh, okay.
Man, I see everything. Even the fucking title screen scares me. I was like, holy shit, dude. I don't know if I'm ready for this. I'm a little worried. Plus, bonus fact is that... I know there's snakes in it, so I was like, hold me tight, I guess, because I'm glad you've been working out. But we start playing the game. Now, he has an experience with it. He played it on whatever it was on way back in the day. Maybe he played it on PS2, I don't recall. So he's played through it in the past, the original version. I had started it on Wii 15 years ago, and it wasn't even my copy. I just was at someone's house and just diddled with it. Was like, wow, this is hard, and then I quit playing it. Well, he gives me the controller first, and I gotta say, I am still as bad at it as if it were a Wii game. It's a hard game, and
it's not easy.
It's not easy, and it reminds me of like Horde mode of like Gears. Like Resident Evil games before this are just one or two enemies at a time. You know, that's what you get, and that's supposed to scare you enough. And this one's immediately like, here's 10, 20 enemies, and also you only have 4 bullets, and you can't run fast. And it's kind of a semi-weird third person. Thank God not tank controls. Well, kind of is, but like it's a little easier to maneuver. But I was having a hard time, man. I was just getting roasted. And thankfully, Briz had played before, and he was like, you can do this, and you can go hide here. I didn't know that was an option. So honestly, I didn't accomplish much for us in my first few playthroughs. I would get murdered and then give the controller to Briz, and then he would take us through the next section. I can't shoot for shit. I don't know what it is about that game, but it's like as soon as the guy's running at me and I'm trying to like aim on him, I'm missing every time. I'm shooting the ears off and like tufts of hair. I am not getting zombie face ever. I get any headshots. But it is fun. I did come across my first snake, opened up the box, there it was, and then I wasted all of our ammo on it.
Just blind firing?
Emptied the clip. Oh, I had it on the first shot, but I shot it several more times, and because I was like, just to make sure. And so, but here's the worst part of it, okay? The animation of the snake's not a big deal. I get that there's snakes in the game. My fear of snakes is actually, it's made progress recently. I'm not as triggered by ones that are fake on-screen snakes. But what does bother me about this? Because I knew there were snakes in the game and I knew you had to kill them when you opened up boxes. I didn't like the idea of a surprise snake. I got over it. The worst part is that they're collectible. You got to put them in your pocket. And then when I go open the inventory, I just got like bullets, weed, and snakes. The fuck are they doing to me? That wasn't okay. It's like, I don't want to have to do that.
And you never know. You know, some of those might come back alive in your inventory and jump out at you when you open them in.
I wish you hadn't said that. I wish you hadn't said that, but yeah, so far it's good. We looked up the how long to beat. I'm surprised. It's about 17, 18 hours, you know, so it's a long one. We're only about 3 hours in. I think we made decent progress in that block, but it's probably going to be one that's going to be sticking around for a few weeks because he and I are going to be alternating vacations for a bit, so it'll be a while before we get to the end of Resident Evil 4, but I'm glad to finally start it and get that, get it going, man. Finally be one of the cool Resident Evil gamers.
Yeah, there you go. And then you're going to have this weird feeling where after this one, you're like, there's not much left to do Resident Evil-wise. That's not good.
Yeah, 5. I do want to play some of the weird spinoffs, like Outbreak and Outbreak 2 and Raccoon Revelation City. I don't know. There's all kinds of weird ones.
5 is fine. 5 is fine. You playing it with Briz, yeah, you're going to have fine. A good time. You're going to have fun. Like, I don't want to oversell how rough it is.
Yeah, I think I've seen people play it. This is the first opening bit of it. It looks like Call of Duty. You're just out in the daylight in the desert. That's weird. Just doesn't, you know, it's a video game. It's just not a good Resident Evil game. I think that's what people say about it.
Yeah, 5 is one of those games that I played when it came out, co-op, and I had fun. But it's one of the few games that over time, my opinion of it has like lowered bit by bit. Like, you know, a little bit of it's evaporated away. And so I like it a little bit less than I did when I first played it. Usually it's the opposite. Usually I just finish a game, I like it, and then time only makes me like it more. So,
hey, that happens, man.
Yeah.
And if time doesn't make you like us more, maybe this plug will, folks.
Oh, true.
Please, if you like what you're hearing so far, how could you not? We're talking about video games. Be sure to check us out on our website, polymedianetwork.com. We got more shows. Quite a few of them talk about video games. For example, Drunk Friend, a podcast I do with our pal Alex, a.k.a. SNES Drunk. This last episode, we got a good email about Fred Durst. And turns out Alex does a great Fred Durst. You don't want to miss it. You want to check that out. Also, Alex talks about a new venture he's picking up. He's starting a new side hobby, a new way to create content that's pretty interesting. And I've gotten to a sneak peek at one of his first outputs, and it's pretty awesome. So Alex is good at what he does. So check out that episode to find out what that might be. That is Drunk Friend.
If you're into indie games, we got a PodQuest. A PodQuest?
Whoa, that's what you should have called it.
Wow, we should be using that more. We've got a PodQuest called IndieQuest, which is all about indie video games. We're giving you a huge, big list of recommendations. Our upcoming episode is going to be indie games that you can get for under $3.
Oh,
it's gonna be a good time, so give it a listen. It's a fun one,
man. Scotch and Hobbies just knocked over his drink trying to get to his computer to load that one up, man. He loves a good cheapo. Uncle Doug, you know, he was back. We talked about it last episode. He was back season 3. We did Top Gun. This is a lot of fun. The second episode of season 3, we have a special guest from mine and Kevin's improv troupe here in Roanoke, Virginia. The good old Big Lit Conspiracy as a special guest. So you want to check that out because we're covering the movie, the Jeff Goldblum classic, The Fly. So be sure to listen to that. Also, our pals Pam and Petey over at Point Drink Adventure, their latest episode called The Lily Show, in reference to Pam's dog. And if you check out the YouTube version, you'll get to see Lily there. She hangs out, has a good time. And they talk about the two Roadhouse movies, the original and the new one. Some video games too, though. Indigo Prophecy comes up. That new Helldivers that everyone's playing, Steve. That's what the cool kids are playing.
Not us. But we mentioned it now, so we can put it in the description of the podcast.
God damn right. Thank you, Pam and Petey, for allowing me to do that.
Pew, pew, pew. Nice. Well, if you want to reach out to us here, you can do so via email at polykillpodcast@gmail.com. Like Trav mentioned earlier, send us your hot seat questions, all right? And you know what? I'll add on top of that, send us your topics to discuss, your top fives. We've got lists for both, and they're both looking a little dry. So we want to hear from you. And if you're a little too bashful to write into the show directly, you're like, I'd like to talk around you, but not to you, hop on over to wherever it is you're listening to the podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever it might be. Leave a little review. Leave a little five-star. Let us know how you think we're doing.
Yes, that'd be great. We really would appreciate that. Podcasters don't just say it because we're obligated to. It really does help out the show. So if you got a minute, do it. We also got a Patreon. So please visit patreon.com/polykill. Find a tier that works for you over there that will help out this show and the whole network of shows. Keeps the lights on around the place. You can get early access to stuff, including Nest Friend videos, podcast episodes. I've been doing a little collector video thing here and there. We got bonus beats. We know you like to hear your damn games read out. We got that going on over there too. Little Polykill extra. So yeah, check it out. You might find something you like.
Yeah. And last but certainly not least, however you can spread the word about the show, give us a little recommendation to your friends, your fam. That's how you really help the show grow, and we appreciate it.
We do. We do indeed. Now, Steve, one thing that I appreciate that you do around here is beat video games. And
I do.
I limped in here with a Travi 2 beats. I don't, you know what? I don't ever, I'm okay to be a Travi no beats because goddamn if that's not a bingo square this year, but I refuse to be a Travi 1 beat. I see that as a bigger slight. You know, and I've always said this about if you watch, you know, you're not a big sports guy, but like a football score, if I see a football score that's like 49-0, for some reason, a score that's like 49-6 feels worse because it seems like the other team felt sorry for the other team enough to let them score. And that seems pathetic. So I don't want to walk in here with just one score. You know, I got to have two. I got to put two on the board. But hey, you've got four. You're going to have to be my bread again.
Dude, I got your back. Don't you worry about it. So I played all the way in one big sitting here, a game that we've talked about not too long ago on our episode where we were discussing digital-only games we'd like to see get a fizz, a dish. And a game I mentioned, it was actually one of the only games I mentioned in that episode or in that discussion that I hadn't actually played at the time was Attack of the Friday Monsters.
I like that name.
Yeah, dude. It's a good game too, man. So the context for people that are not aware of it, Attack of the Friday Monsters was a 3DS eShop only game, and it was part of what was called like the Guild Collection. And so different developers basically made like small versions or like beefed up prototypes. Like they tended to be relatively short experiences or relatively slight in some way or another, but not like demo length. Like still you could play them in a couple of hour type games. And then they bundled these together, level 5 bundled them together and put it out. There was a Fizz Edition for some of these games in Japan only, but Attack of the Friday Monsters was one of the games that came out as a part of that collection. It is from the studio Millennium Kitchen, and it is very much a spinoff, or it is in the style of the Boku no Natsuyasume or the My Summer Vacation games, if anybody's ever played one of those. And so Attack of the Friday Monsters is a very slice of life game with like a little bit of fantastical thrown in there too. You are, you know, as tends to be sort of the setup in all of these My Summer Vacation games, you find yourself as a young kid around 10 years old. You end up moving to some rural town or staying in a rural town for a summer vacation, whatever it might be. In this case, your family has just moved and opened a laundromat in this small town. And you're sort of just like walking the town, getting to know kids, meeting the people, and just sort of like vibing, like learning how to live your life and like kind of be in this small town space and appreciating all the things that come with that, you know, like a lot of nice nature, little bits of industrialization creeping into an otherwise relatively quiet life, that kind of thing. And then that is sort of usually where those My Summer Vacation games stop. But Attack of the Friday Monsters goes one step further, and all the kids in town talk about how on Fridays is when the kaiju monsters battle out in the fields.
Whoa.
And they're talking about it very like matter of factly, not like they're scared. Like it's almost like they were saying, like, yeah, you know, it storms on Fridays. Like, mm-hmm. it's a part of their life. And so for part of the game, you're like, what the hell is going on? And then, you know, eventually it becomes Friday. Actually, the whole game takes place over one long day. And so eventually Friday evening comes and you get to see the event and the things that follow and things like that.
Wow.
But so you always kind of have that, like, mystery. And it's actually really fascinating and very cool the way that that stuff just, like, integrates into everyday life. So you're, you know, you're meeting kids, you're playing little card games and stuff with each other, collecting trading cards, you know, you're going to restaurants and just doing whatever. And then randomly out, like, in the field on a path that you're walking on, there'll be this enormous, like, Godzilla footprint that is pressed meters into the ground. And that no one will be like, whoa, what's this? Everyone just treats it as, like, part of their everyday life. There's kids, like, standing next to it, blocking the, like, narrow bit of path left that hasn't been smashed down by Godzilla, being like, I'm not going to let you through unless you can beat me in marbles. That kind of thing. So it's just this really cool mix. It is a slow game, and it is a relaxing game. It is very much, it's the type of game that you want to play, or that would be really perfect to play, you know, on a nice summer evening with the windows open, it's a little bit humid, you got a breeze rolling through the house, or maybe you're out on the back porch. It'd be perfect to play in that kind of setting. It's just really very heartfelt. It's a very sweet game, and it's just comfortable. It's not to make this the only touch point for Japan, but it feels like a Miyazaki movie in a lot of ways, where you just like you get that little bit of, like, a rural life that you're not really a part of, but you understand the appeal of it. So I really liked my time with it. I played through, it's like 3 hours long, like I said, and I played through the whole thing in one big sitting. Super fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, just a little bit of gameplay I'm looking at here. The vibe, it does feel like Miyazaki meets, like, Harvest Moon or something, or like Animal Crossing or something like that. It's interesting.
Yeah, very much so. And it's beautiful. It kind of has, like, it's not pre-rendered, but it has sort of the Resident Evil thing where there's, like, very, like, sharp camera angles, and as when you walk from one part of the town to another, it'll cut to, like, an entire different view of the street, and then you'll run further down the path, and suddenly there'll be this, like, really high overhead shot, and it's just a lot of cool vistas and things. They're really good about, like, framing the camera on this, like, environment that they've set up.
Pretty neat, man. What'd you say you're playing it on?
It's a 3DS eShop exclusive, which means it's no longer purchasable. So I had it already just sitting on my SD card. Play it any way you can. I'll say there's ways to play 3DS eShop games post-closure that is not particularly taxing. So play it any way you can.
There you go. Good insight there. Cool, man. Well, I'll go ahead and knock one out here. So like I said, I was trying to fluff my numbers a little bit. I'll admit, we get busy. I put away a pretty big game we'll talk about in a minute. I've spent a lot of time trying to finish off, and I didn't leave myself a lot of time to get any other beats in, so I thought, hey, why don't we check out, I'm kind of feeling an N64 experience. What's light over there? And I see Virtual Chess 64 hanging out there, and it's like, I know that's a little more than just chess. And I remember, I know a little bit about it. You know, you get the cutscenes, right? When if your pawn attacks a bishop, it cuts to, like, this silly little fight between a man and a bishop. You know what I mean? Like, it does, like, fun little animations. And it has a handful it goes through. They get worn out pretty quick. After, like, one chess game, you'll probably just be turning that off and be like, I've seen all that has to offer.
Kind of has the energy of, like, when you get a turkey at a bowling alley where you're like, oh, look at that. That's a charming animation.
Yeah, exactly. It's that. And there's a couple of things about it that kind of annoy me for, like, the time. Like, you can rotate the board. So, Matt, you know, you're playing chess, and the view is behind your pieces, right? Yeah. And because it's 3D, they're real proud of that. They made it 3D. They spent a lot of time doing that. They rendered all the pieces just right. it's hard to sometimes see your front line because your back line pieces are tall. And so you kind of want to tilt the board or rotate it a little bit. But you only rotate things in one direction. So if you get it, tweak it a little bit to the right, you can't go left unless you spin it all the way back around.
That's how I play Tetris.
Right. But worse than that, too, is if you spin it, it doesn't change the orientation of your D-pad to select pieces. So if you turn the board upside down, it's still the same, like, down is now up, And so you can't play it from the other angles. You kind of just have to use the other angles to peek and then spin it back around so that you don't get lost in what you're doing.
Boo.
That's archaic. The N64 is highly capable. It did not need that restriction. Also, the thing about this game is that I suck at chess. I was good. I swear to God, I was pretty good at it when I was 10. I went through this whole chess phase of life where me and this one kid that was pretty good at chess went on to be accomplished at chess and was like in chess clubs and things. He and I would play all the time, right? And I learned a lot about the game from him. And then 30 years later, I'm terrible. The computer wiped me out every time. The only way I was able to beat it was there is a way that you can just go back. So you can like undo moves. So after like 7 matches where I was just, and it does a clever little thing too, where it shows like your chance of victory over on the side. So after a move, you can watch your chance, most of the time, watch my chances just tank. And I was like, oh, bad idea. Bad idea then. Okay. And then I would just hit back and be like, let's try a different thing then. Because I clearly that wasn't. So I used that to kind of feel my way through a game just to get the victory. But it was addictive. I was having fun with it. I think like the orientation restrictions are annoying, but it is just chess on the N64. So it's not like, and this game is not cheap or as cheap as it should be for what it is. I'll admit that. But I definitely can say that I had fun with it. It would be more fun. Actually, you know what? I don't think it would be more fun with the second player because I don't know how the board would work. I think it would be obnoxious. I think it would be worse.
Can you even do two-player on it?
That's a good question. I'm not even sure that you can, to be honest. It might just be all against, which that would be another giant miss for this game if you can't play two players in a board game. But I don't know, man. I had fun with it. I think the animations are pretty silly, too, which is a thing you can just look up on YouTube. You do not have to play the game to enjoy what... like the one unique thing about this game, which is the animations of the fights. It is fun though to see like your pawn, which is just looks like dumpy fat dude, get mowed down by a castle. Like that's hilarious. Or like conversely, if your pawn like beats something huge, it's fun to watch that little guy just beat up, you know, like a rook or something or a whatever. So it's fun. Would I recommend it? Nah, I think you could do better. But hey, I played it, so you don't have to.
And did it just require one game of chess and then you were good to go?
Yeah, that was there's no other mode. You can just kind of change the settings for the game. Like you can go to preferences and kind of change how you play it. But there's no like campaign. You just play a match and
nice.
You can change the difficulty. So it does have let me take that back real quick. You can beat the game and up the difficulty from like there's like beginner one, beginner two, then levels 1 through 10. So it gets harder, and that would probably be a way to outright say that you beat the game. I don't have that in me, and I never will. So I considered one match being, I'm not going to become Magnus Carlsen to fucking get the victory on this, man. I beat the game in one match. I'm okay.
Maybe beating all those is how, like, you know, video game sage would call it a beat or something, but
I know, I
for the purposes of Polykill, we're good.
Yeah, I looked it up and it didn't say so. It just said win a match. So I think other people were in agreement.
All right. Anyway. The three guys that help out that thread by beating virtual chess were like, we're just going to play one game.
Yeah, that's...
Come at me.
Yeah, for real.
All right, good one. Probably the only person in 2024 to have beaten that game.
100%.
But a game that more people than just you have been playing is Children of the Sun. So this is the rare... Now, this isn't the full hat trick, but it is the rare last episode on the coming soon. This episode, it's in the credits. You know, I like to see the progression of the coming soon to the now playing to the credits, but I beat her too dang quick. What can I say? Mm-hmm. I'm too much of a goddamn gamer. I didn't have any time to just start playing it.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, but Children of the Sun, really cool game. So this is an indie game that just came out. It is by a solo developer and published by Devolver Digital. And it is a sniper puzzle game. So it's got this incredibly like dark, stylish, sort of like intense. Like the vibe of the game is like you turn to the bass up like 5% more than the speakers can handle. So they're starting to rattle and you know you're going to blow them out. You just haven't quite blown them out yet. That is like the art style of this game. And every level starts out. You can run usually around a circular perimeter, but sometimes you're limited to only like a half circle. And you're playing as a character with a sniper rifle. you are, and it's all on this like cultist complex, and you are looking down the barrel of your sniper scope to find all the different cultists. You can tag them once you find them to be like, okay, that's where this person is. That's where this person is. Because sometimes they'll know. They'll have walking paths, or they'll move around, or they'll be inside buildings that you can only see from specific angles. So you want to tag them so you can see them. And the game will tell you in the upper corner how many cultists there are in this level. And then once you like have a good feel, you feel like you've tagged everybody, or you've tagged everyone that you can reasonably find, you line up your first shot, you press fire, and then it switches from the camera being over your character to the camera following the bullet. And the bullet, in very like Sniper Elite style or something, you'll watch the bullet go directly into like the head or the kneecap or the crotch of whoever it is you just shot.
Love that.
And as soon as it hits that person, the game goes into like hyper slow motion, and then you can redirect the trajectory of that bullet from the person you just killed somewhere else.
Right.
And so you're kind of trying to like imagine a connect the dots of murder in this right. environment, where you're trying to strategically figure out like what's the best way to hit all of these guys and make sure I'm always at the right angle, killing one guy to be set up to see the next guy. And, you know, they also add in some other stuff on top of that. You get powers and stuff that let you manipulate the trajectory in certain ways. You'll also learn in pretty early on that you can shoot like the gas tank of a car or like a bird up in the air to sometimes just use it as like a positional advantage to sort of redirect your angle. Like, you know, maybe you had to kill someone that was behind a big stack of logs, and then you shoot up and kill the birds. Now you've got a bird's eye view. You can go down and hit someone else. And it's just, it's like a puzzle game built around that concept. And there's layers you can go on top of that. There's like added objectives you can strive for. It's got leaderboards and a score, so you're rewarded for both doing it really fast and also shots that travel long distances. So like the mental game of just beating it is actually very different from trying to high score it, because you're trying to high score, you're kind of always trying to figure out who's the farthest guy I can get to from here and still have a line of sight and draw like much longer lines than that. But yeah, it's just like a tremendously stylish, very cool game. It reminds me of, honestly, you know, it's nothing like it in terms of gameplay style at all. So maybe this is just something that makes sense in my head, but it's like almost the exact opposite of Neon White. Mm. Neon White was like fast and like frenetic and colorful and bright. And this is like slow and methodical and gritty and depressing. But they both have this vibe that just kind of makes sense. Yeah, it's really, really a cool game.
Yeah, dude, I'm watching some gameplay now. This looks right up my alley. I love everything I'm seeing here. I'm curious, like, when you shoot the bullet, do you have a limited number of, are you timed, or do you have a limited number of things you can hit? Like, what's the restriction on the bullet, or can you just kind of willy-nilly bounce around until you're done?
You only get the one shot, but you can bounce as many times as you need to, with the caveat being you can only bounce off of people or living things. You can't bounce off of like a wall or a rock or something. So
I see. But you're not timed. Like when you're looking for like your next target.
Yeah, you can line up that next shot or that ricochet for as long as you want to. I mean, you're timed in the sense that
the bullet's still moving.
Your time
bit.
Add to your score.
Oh, I see.
And so if you want a high score, you wouldn't want to be as fast as possible and like really whipping around quickly. But if you're not really like leaderboard chasing, there's not much need for that. You could play it as slow as you need to. And the slow-mo, like characters will, like once the first person gets shot, you know, other characters around them will see that and like freak out
around.
And start running.
I see.
But they really don't run too fast. So it's pretty rare that they will actually like get away from you. They'll just be in a different spot than maybe you anticipated by the time you get around to them. Now, there are some enemies later that are in like moving vehicles and stuff that do move a little bit faster, even in slow-mo. So that can get a little trickier, but yeah, it's by and large, you have the time to stop and make decisions to get where you need to be.
Oh, this looks awesome, dude. How many levels are there? How long did it take you?
It's like a 3 to 4 hour game. First time through, something like 30 levels. It's very doable. Dude, I highly recommend it. You'll be into it for sure. It's got If you're ever in the mood for like a real nice, intense story too, it's there's these cutscenes every couple of levels that are, there's no dialogue or anything, but they give you like a vague sense of what's going on, and they all have this kind of like tone. It's very like revenge story where you're obviously rooting for the person getting revenge, but by the end of it, you're like, oh God, that was maybe not, you know, very Last of Us Part Two, where you're like, right. I sympathize, but by the end you're like, oh boy, this is no winners here, I don't think.
Interesting, man. It looks right up my alley. So what did you play it on, you said?
I played it on PC, and if you play it on PC, it only uses the mouse. You don't ever touch a keyboard at all. But okay. I think it's also out on Switch. I think it might be PC and Switch.
That's a weird pairing. That's rare.
I'm not sure. Might just be PC, now that I'm thinking about it.
Because I know we talked about it some before. I know it's Devolver Digital. And also, I guess Super Hot is a good analog for this as well.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. It's not like, you know, I move, you move type of thing, but it is Super Hot is a good way to think about that thing.
Yeah, very cool game, man. Well, thanks for putting that on my radar once more. I definitely want to get that and play it. Very cool.
Yeah, check it out. It looks like it is only on PC for now. It's Devolver, so I imagine it'll come to consoles at some point.
Nice, nice. All right, give me another one here.
All right. Yeah, I'll I've been gaming it up over here.
Yeah, game.
Pretty productive week for me.
Two weeks.
So, again, I've been kind of bingo horny lately. I've been looking at that bingo board and buttering my biscuit and thinking, what can I knock out? And I mentioned to you earlier, I was debating between Newtopia and Final Lab Twin. When I opted out of Final Lab Twin, I was like, well, there goes my racing game. I need another racing game. So I dusted off the old Team Sonic Racing.
Oh.
And this is an interesting one. I had actually played a bit of this already when it first came out back in 2019 or whenever it was. A while back now. But when I played it before, I only played it online. It was one of those games where I got it right away because I knew there's about 3 months of shelf life in terms of anyone being online playing these matches at all. And once that time period is up, it's just going to be a ghost town. So if I want to play as freaking Eggman against Knuckles, I need to do it on launch. And so I bought it. And I played pretty much exclusively multiplayer, and I had fun with it. It's pretty good. But I had poked into the like adventure story mode a little bit, but didn't really get too far. So I brought it back out, whipped it out, and started going through the adventure mode proper, which is, it's pretty neat. It's not the like best single player of any racing game, but it's perfectly serviceable. I guess I should give just the kind of the broad context. Team Sonic Racing, if you've ever played any of the other Sonic racers, it plays pretty similar to like Sega and Sonic All-Star Racers, the ones that were on Wii U and 360 and stuff. The hook in this one is that you play in teams of three. And so it's logical Sonic the Hedgehog groupings that you might expect, right? It's like your team is Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles. And when you do a race, it's 12 player races. And at the end of a race, it assigns points based on how well everyone in your team did. And then it adds those points together. And whichever team scored the most points is the actual winner of the race. So that could kind of kick you in the stones a bit, because I can get first place and freaking Knuckles gets ninth and Tails gets 11th. And I'm like, well, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah.
That sucked. So it's like it's a fun idea, but it ends up sometimes being a little bit more of just a nuisance than anything else. It's
right.
In the race, it's fun because you can like pass items back and forth between racers, and like
I was curious about that, like can you help them at all, like do you have any control over how they turn out?
You totally can. You can, any item you get, you can send, you can offer up to one of the other two racers and they can take it if they need it, or if you don't have an item, you can request an item, and if they have one, maybe they'll give it to you. Plus, if you are drifting behind one of the people on your team for a couple of seconds, you'll build up a little speed boost, and then you can slingshot around them and get like a little mini turbo. Mm. And then on top of that, all those actions that I just described, plus like knocking out other racers and stuff, build like a team ultimate meter that you can all then use once it's full to get like a big burst of speed.
Okay.
And so Yeah, it is. It mechanically in the races, it is pretty good. It's just that the standings at the end of the race suck because it's a lot of times it feels out of your hands.
Right, right, right.
But they mix up the story mode pretty well. That's, you know, a mix of like individual races and like Grand Prix, but then they also have a bunch of like other challenges that are sort of like, you know, slaloming between flagpole races or like races where you have to collect rings while drifting to like keep a timer from going down that only has 10 seconds on the timer, but you can like race for 2 minutes if you do well, a whole bunch of other stuff. So they mix it up just enough for it to be fun, but I still think in spite of that, the adventure mode maybe goes on a little too long. It's not, I honestly couldn't tell you what the hell the story is. I've been freaking shooting right past me, little child of light syndrome.
Yeah.
It knows it doesn't need one. It has so little confidence in the story that when you're in the Grand Prix and you choose a level, it says press X to play level, press square to skip story and play level. Like they assigned a unique button to skip the story without having to manually go in and skip it. So They knew you didn't care what the hell a Chow was saying to friggin' Amy Rose. They're like, just get in there and race in the goddamn car. You son
like,
of a hedgehog.
Why even have a story? It's not like Mario Kart doesn't have a story. Like, you don't need a story. We don't need a fucking story. We want a race. No one's getting that. Like, I wonder what happens in the end. You win a cup. Yeah.
Anyone that could tell you the story of Team Sonic Racing without currently being playing it in that very moment, you walk up to someone and you're like, did you play Team Sonic Racing? They say, yeah. You say, what's the story? They start legitimately telling me the story. They need to be executed on site. Like, on the spot. Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, we all need that person. It's over for you. Yeah. Unless they made the game, in which case.
Yeah, you made some terrible mistakes in your life. You got to save some of that space for, you know, skills.
Yeah. Well, it looks fun, though. I mean, just looking at the, it looks great. What did you play it on?
I'm playing on PS4. But
okay.
No, I think it's on Switch and some other stuff, too. It could run on anything. It's good time if you want just, like, some good, honest racing. You know, I wasn't in the mood for anything a little more simmy, but I wasn't, like, looking to go full kart racer for my racing game, so this was a good halfway point.
Very cool, man. Yeah, looks awesome. Looks fun. I finally got back into Far Cry 6 and polished that old guy off. Yeah. You know, I did. I thought when I got back into it, you know, I was about 15, 16 hours in, and I thought I was close because I've just been mainline chugging the main quest. I wasn't really into the side quest in this one. And it still took me over 30 hours. So that sunk, you know, double the time I had in it the last couple of weeks just to finish it off. And a lot of that was like, I really thought I was about done and it kept going. And it kept giving me more main quests to do. And I was like, just come on. I can say that, this is maybe one of my, I still had fun with it, but it's definitely my least favorite of at least the numbered series. And I spent a lot of time thinking about why. And it could be a few things. It could be that, like, I've been playing Far Cry games roughly yearly or at least every other year for a while. And maybe there's a little bit of burnout. It could also be that they've iterated enough past where I first fell in love with it that it's no longer really the same experience. And it's got a lot of the same DNA. I mean, at this point, I can already tell when the certain trope missions are going to come. They always have one mission where you're like high and stumbling around and everything's blurry. Like that's a trope. And they just have a few things like that. And I also like the use of Juan Carlos Esposito as the villain, because I think he's great in Breaking Bad and he's a great actor, but they don't use him enough. And I still think back to like Voss from Far Cry 3 and that guy was just a sub boss, but just how memorable and hateable he was. And in this one, I don't know. I just didn't, there's a connection missing for me where I don't love these as much. And two, I think one of the best things about Far Cry back in the day was the meme of all Ubisoft games was climbing the tower to unlock some map. That's gone. They felt it too memeified. They were embarrassed.
People made fun of them too much. They took it out.
They took it out. That's a great part of the game. Unlocking the map iteratively. In this one, you kind of have free-for-all. You get access to planes early. I don't know. It's just you get too much too soon, I think. And I think in the old Far Cry games, the 3 and 4, and even Primal, your graduation up to get like even a wallet in the third game, you had to like kill a shark to skin its pelt to get a wallet. And if you saw a big enemy, it was scary because you started out weak and it took a while to sort of graduate up. But in this one, within like an hour, I had every gun, cars, planes, and it was just like, it became a Just Cause game where it's like, you want me to have like a playground of fun, and I appreciate that, but I liked the survival aspect of the early ones where the stakes felt high the whole time and it was tense. And this is, I'm just at my will just murdering guys, and I don't know, it just lost some of what made it kind of interesting to me. I'd say I sunk 30 hours in. I don't regret a minute of it. I thought, you know, it was still fun, but it's a different kind of game. It's not a survival game anymore. It is, it's a war game.
Is it? And does this close the book then on you for Far Cry? Like, have you officially caught up with the series?
Oh, yeah, it does. I thought you meant like, would I be done forever? But yeah, it is. So I do want to go back. I never played anything pre-3. And I have those, and I hear they're rough, but I think they're more like in line with what I'm interested in. Like, I know one of them has weapons that rust and break, and I'm like, I don't mind a game where the weapons rust and break, because that happens. I like sort of that, you know, make me think and not go around willy-nilly murdering everything. I kind of like having somebody put the brakes on it so that I can think and strategize, and there's like consequences, right? So I think that'll be more interesting to me than what it's become, which is just Call of Duty in the jungle. I hate to say it. I didn't love it. I didn't love it. I liked it, but I didn't love it.
That's a bummer. But hey, you still beat it. You're still all caught up now. You prepped and ready when they come out and they start saying Far Cry 7, it's a return to form. It's back what you loved about Far Cry 3. Get ready. You can be like, hell yeah, I'm good to go.
Yeah, dude. I mean, Far Cry 7, I'm gonna play the next one when it comes out. No doubt about it. I do still like Far Cry as my shooter of choice. It's just, you know, not what it used to be. And that's okay. I can be a boomer sometimes and be like, back in my day, you know, I can do that for certain things.
We're allowed that here and there. We're allowed that a little bit.
I've done that with Turtles now and Far Cry. I liked it back in the day.
Well, you know, we're right. All right. We're not old. We're just right.
That's right.
Last one here. I won't belabor the point too much, but I did close the book on Tale Concerto, which was a great time right up until the last dungeon, which was awful. So here's the thing. Great game, very charming world, you know, colorful, bright, fun, playful, just like very 90s, you know, anime inspired sort of like upbeat kind of energy to it. Then you get to this last dungeon in a game that already has, I would say, the most medium of controls. Like, they're fine. They're serviceable, but they're not great. The last dungeon is a black void, and it's apparently underwater, which completely changes your jump physics. Your jump is now, like, 4 times slower, and you fall, like, you descend from the height of the jump really slowly in a way where you have to, like, mentally, like, map out where you're going to land by several seconds. And then the dungeon itself is a teleporter maze of entirely composed of moving floating platforms above the void, where any jump that you miss, you fall all the way back to the bottom and have to start completely over again.
It's always a kick in the nuts.
So I'm dealing with physics I don't understand, different from what I've played the entire game. And then the actual navigation of this is difficult. And then on top of that, I don't even know which teleporters to go in. Every now and again, I go into a teleporter that warps me back down a couple of floors. I was not having a great time. It was a painful 40 minutes of trying to get through this dungeon, which was a real like slamming on the brakes compared to the pretty good pacing in the game up to that point. So, but I got through. And actually, then to top it all off, you get to a boss, and in the boss fight, it has a hook to it. It wasn't that hard to figure out, but it has a hook to it where if you don't figure out the hook, the boss just continually revives over and over again. So I beat the boss twice before I realized what was actually going on and started fighting it a third time. I was like, I must be missing something around here. So
we're irritable today. We're grumpy.
We are grumpy. Again, that aside though, it was a bruise on the game, but it wasn't enough for me to pull back my previously held opinion, which is just game. This game's good. It just game rules. It's worth playing. It's just, you know, it ends on a whimper where the rest of the game is kind of like a roar. So,
man. Well, yeah, it's, you know, it remains on my wish list and
it should
one day future backlog item. But
yeah, it's worth playing for sure. And you should pick it up.
Man, well, you seem like you had a good time, dude. You beat four pretty decent games there. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, nice variety there. I'm feeling it.
Yeah, I did look up. I took the time to just to confirm the video game sage, what their doctrine is for Virtual Chess 64, and it turns out I should have beaten it without using help. But I fuck them. It's in the rear view now, boys. We did it. We beat it the way I beat it. Very cool. All right. Well, we gotta move along here. We've been going long. We got polykillers to cover here. If you're interested in being a polykiller yourself, you can check the show notes and figure out how to get your name read out here on the show. But Steve, I'm seeing a couple names here for weeks now, for episodes in a row, we've had a really close toss up here. And I think that's incredible.
Yeah.
Tell me what's the drama here? What was the situation?
It's just another neck and neck from two of the heavyweight champs, all right? These are a couple of names that you're going to recognize, and they're just a single game apart. There's actually another runner-up that was just a single game behind then. I get sweating in these competitions because I'm sitting here thinking, Twitter hasn't been great to me lately.
Yeah.
If even one beat disappeared into the void, that could turn the tables. But as far as we know, as much as technology has permitted, these are our scores. And in the runner-up position, we got our special little piggy himself, Scooch and Hoobles, with 17 beats in the runner-up position. And he beat, I mean, let me know if you can spot the jank in here. I'm sure there's some mixed in. Gungrave Overdose, Black the Fall, A Building Full of Cats, Cotton 100%, 10 Second Ninja X, Injustice 2, Thomas Was Alone, Koihime Enbu Ryo Rai Rai,
whoa.
Action Hank, Super Blood Hockey, Stick Bold, Game Tengoku Cruisin' Mix Special, Quake, Turnip Boy Commits Tax Evasion, Ascend Shaft, Dead or Alive 5, and Steam World Dig. Good mix of games there.
It is a good mix of games. He actually beat some good stuff in there. He left the truffles behind a couple times to go get some real good pig food.
Yeah, he's... Scotch and Hobby is one of the few people out there I know that is for sure going for the full 75 square sweep. So some of these I'm looking at, I'm like, SteamWorld Dig sure is a game where you are digging underground, and Thomas Was Alone sure is a game that was recently featured on IndieQuest. So I see what you're doing there, buddy.
Heck yeah, dude. You love to see it. He's one that dedicates. He goes all in. Appreciate that. Another guy who's just all the time beating games left, right, and center. That's good old Michael Conde, Braniac, 345. He's all fiber. He's all brand. Let's see what he's got here. 18 for Polykiller. He's got Super Mario World, Super Mario Advance 2. Always hated the name of that game. Very confusing.
Yeah.
But glad you beat it. Kuru Kuru Kuruin. Nailed it. First try. Felix the Cat on the Game Boy. Then Felix the Cat on the NES. Hit him from both sides. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Beat you on that one.
Just one of the 18.
Yeah, that's crazy. Mario Party 5, Kirby, Superstar Ultra, Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare, maybe my favorite. Darkstalkers Chronicle, The Chaos Tower, The King of Fighters 98, Hi-Fi Rush, I know you like that one, Steve. Dark Seal, Pong, he beat Pong. He went through the annals of history, found Pong, beat Pong. I didn't know you could beat Pong. P-47 Phantom Fighter, Game & Watch Gallery 3, Super R-Type, wow, look, we got a real gamer over here, Amazing Hebereke, nailed it, first try, and Freedom Planet 2, which sounds like it'd be a long game. How you beating long games?
Several of these are long games. Hi-Fi Rush is a full-ass normal video game, all right? What are you doing? It's like ridiculous. Braniac, what a king.
Yeah, seriously, man. Well, good job there, man. We love to see it. Happy Polykill, and you guys just killed it, man. We gotta give some other people some attention, though. We can't just let you two studs have it. We got some random beat tweets here. Do you want me to kick it off?
Yeah, why don't you start us off?
All right, we got Weedo here, our good pal Weedo. This is a Masto Beach there on the Mastodon. He says, Wrath, Aeon of Ruin, the worthy Quake 1 sequel we never got.
This is not just a boomer shooter, but what I call an exploration FPS. I felt like I said that weird. Exploration FPS. Very few games are like it, and I love the genre. Great looking and playing game. Level design is very diverse in style and gameplay. It's best in class and has beautiful brushwork. Love the movement additions for fun secret hunting and sequence breaking, and the alternative quick save system gave some extra tension. Chef's kiss. There's a couple sentences there I thought might have been written by AI, but overall... Well said. I mean, if our pal Wido is likening yeah. anything to Quake, he's holding back from saying that he loves the game immensely.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So there's your recommendation, all you Quake heads out there. Go play Wrath, Aeon of Ruin. We got one here from Scooch and Hoobles, though. He beat Gungrave Overdose. Says you play as undead hero Grave as you try and unseat a mafia boss and blah, blah, blah. Who cares about the story? Walk down hallways, shooting the shit out of anything that moves. A great action game, not quite as good as the first, though. Boss design was not so great, and the game isn't quite as snappy and quick as the first, but I still had fun. You 6.5 out of 10 jank lords will dig this game.
Heck yeah, man. Talking right to me.
Yep, I'm thinking, all right, let's be hopping on eBay after this podcast. Maybe during this podcast.
Yeah, heck yeah, man. Up next, we got a Hungry Bill from Down Under. Just beat it here. Golden Axe, the arcade version, went to a monthly retro gaming meetup and hacked and slashed our way through. It's a bit dated, but still enjoyable co-op. My son really enjoyed kicking the meat out of the thieving elf weirdos. That is a fun part when you get to kick the elves a whole bunch. Yeah. And I love the idea of a monthly retro gaming meetup. I think I need more friends.
Yeah, that sounds good. We don't all have Brez McMuscles in our lives to go play games with every weekend.
And he doesn't really like retro games. I got to find a real local pervert, you know, to hang out with.
Yeah.
And I probably have the retro spot in town. And people are probably coming to my place to hang. But
anyone know what the safe place to meet retro perverts is? Let me know.
Yeah.
We got one here. Speaking of retro perverts, this isn't so retro. It's getting retro, honestly, to go back to our boomer. This is almost a decade old. Got one from Muddy River, who beat Doom 2016. Says, also, just got my first bingo. Kudos to you, Muddy.
Congrats.
This is a great reboot to one of the legendary franchises in gaming. I got worried at the beginning because it felt very repetitive, but the mid-game and end-game ramped up the difficulty and added lots of variety. The game feels great, the music is awesome, and the story is, well, there is one.
Mm-hmm.
Something, something, portals to hell, stop this person from doing something, yada, yada, it's freaking Doom, just go shoot stuff. Man, this is not a kind episode to stories in video games. We're all just kicking them in the jimmies.
We ain't got time for your stories today.
We don't, apparently.
If you want a story, go listen to Tales of Lesser Medium. Get them out of my video games. I'm trying to play. Good stuff there, buddy. I love Doom 2016. That soundtrack is still one of my favorites. All right, up next, this one was written just for you, Steve. This is from our pal Lazy Eyes Played. He beat Jassant. He's a beautiful game, great music. I really enjoyed its vibe. Gameplay gets old, and the story being told by bland notes feels like another story down the drain. I didn't read them after the first chapter and inferred the world's history like it was a team eco game. Glad I climbed this mountain.
I did the same thing, and you said the magic words there, Lazy. This is why I like you, in referencing that Team Eco.
Yeah.
I 100% did literally the exact same thing. I read one chapter's worth of notes, and I was like, no, this isn't going to happen. Don't put like a 5-paragraph essay in there, all right? I fall asleep.
Yeah, I'm with you, dude. I can't.
If I'm squinting, I got like a 70-inch TV. If I'm squinting, you messed up.
Yeah.
Speaking of people that messed up, we got one from JJS Boyce. Beat Firewatch. Says, I'm glad I got to play this. The voice acting and the visual and sound design deserve plaudits?
I don't know. He's so smart, dude. That's probably
I'm learning a new word today.
Yeah.
Plaudits. All right, boys. All right. All right. Kudos is what the normal kids say. And the game design was novel at the time, but the mechanics had some rough spots, and the plot and characterization sometimes missed the mark 7 out of 10.
You talk about a game with story. This is the one. You got to like the story. This is a fun story. It's a good game. Boys, 7 out of 10 is still fine, but it should have been an 11 out of 10. I'm a little mad.
That's so true.
You left some numbers on the table. Did you forget to put a 1 in front of that 17 out of 10? That's more like it.
All right, I'm not going to stay mad at you. I'm going to move on and talk about Mr. Mo 1984, who also beat Firewatch. Let's see how it holds up here. He says, after replaying, Blink still recommending it is reason enough to play the game, but it's also the actual Synergy Bingo Square game. Good game. Buy on sale. For more information, listen to the latest Indie Quest Pod episode. And yeah, this seems a little bit more positive. And goddamn, I just love that everybody's playing it right now.
Yeah, no kidding. And last one here in this run of Firewatch beat tweets is another Firewatch beat tweet from VIAR45.
I'm so turned on.
That's right. We knocked three of them back to back. I did this just for you, buddy. It says, Firewatch has a lot going for it, but over 8 years after its release and 2.5 million sold copies later, it still has the same severe bugs. I had the audacity to go back to the main menu and fried a 2-hour save game that way? What the fuck, Campo Santo? I like that he adds Campo Santo as if that's not a completely dead account from developers that work at other companies now. But
that's probably why he felt the liberty to add them, because no one's on the other end of that stream.
Yeah, that's so true. But I'm glad you beat it. And I pulled all these just to give a shout out to Vyar, who had a good idea. He's been basically artificially boosting the synergy squares, but in reality just helping people out in the Discord. And he's been sort of like unofficially creating community games that everyone can play through that are short and snappy. I think he posted it on Twitter too, what they're going to be. So if you're looking to get a synergy square and you're not sure what other people are beating, check out VIAR45. He's tweeting out stuff that they're going to play through collectively that'll help you stand a chance of getting that bingo square done.
That is right. Also, I would say that check in on what VIAR45 is doing. Also, Cartridge Club is already a bingo square in and of itself, but that could also get you some synergy angles too if you play it alongside some of those folks. So don't forget about the club.
Yeah.
All right. Up next, we got Burger Champ, who did not beat Firewatch, but he did beat Taco Tan. Nailed it. First try. A fun and absolutely adorable horizontal cute-em-up. Not too challenging, but not overly easy either. Not a ton of enemy variety, but the levels are well designed and engaging. Recommend if you want something fun that's also under 2 hours. Man, that is magical words to me. Just wrote it down.
Yep. I appreciate that, Burger. Thank you so much. We got here one from Marshall Tuftley.
Okay.
Tuftley, who was a victim of the great... Twitter apocalypse, whatever you want to call it. Twitter hiding some of these beat tweets, but we dug them out, all right? We found our man's beat tweets, and we got one here to read for you. It is Cyber Citizen Shockman, a fantastic PC Engine game. So glad it finally got released over here. A simple side-scrolling hack and slash with a great soundtrack, funny dialogue mixed with a unique level choice option, and straightforward upgrades. Love to see some PC Engine love in the beat tweets.
You do love to see it. You don't get enough of it around here. And when it shows up, you get excited. I know I do. So good job up there, Marshall. Now we got, speaking of Marshall, we got Michael. All right, close enough. Braniac345, close enough in that he beat 17 more games than Marshall. But he'd be also one of those games that he beat, the 76th one of the year, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Steve, what's taking you so long?
I know.
Michael beat this alongside 17 other games. well, technically 75 other games. And he says, this was a fantastic sequel. I loved pretty much everything about this game. The story was just so amazing as you rediscovered old areas from the original game, and the characters are fantastic to watch and play as, too. Seemed like Michael here has a lot of good things to say about his experience.
Oh, yeah. Good job. Congrats on the many, many hours you put in. Got one here from Kurgan at Quergan.
He's Kurgan.
Number 139 for the year, Rocket Knight Adventures on the Mega Drive. Says, thanks to Blinkoom's feedback during the bonus beats, I gave this a go. That's true. You bonus beat listeners will recall that our boy Kurgan last time around beat Sparkster, and I said, maybe try the Rocket Knight Adventures. But he continues on and says, better than Super Nintendo Sparkster, especially the controls and the game design, but still not my fave. Some of the levels, such as level 5, are just plain annoying. Well, I'm glad that we clawed back a little bit of appreciation for the series, but I'm sorry that it still didn't quite hit for you, Kurgan.
Yeah, sometimes he Kurgs, sometimes he Quergs.
Yeah.
Up next, we got Go Hobo Go. All right. And this is finished game number 43 on the year. These are big beaters out here we're talking about. You know, I'm still in the 20s for the year. These guys are just crushing it. But he beat Legna Tactica.
Oh, man, that is the name of a video game, all right? Kimco isn't usually known for quality. To my surprise, I enjoyed it. Combat is basic for an SRPG. The story is what kept me going. It's unorthodox and long-winded, but worth trying. I wasn't disappointed. 3.5 out of 5 stars. Not heard of this one at all. But the color palette is... It lures me in. I like that.
Same. I've been trying to peg, like, what system is this on? Is this a PSP game? Is this a Game Boy Advance game?
I was thinking Game Boy Advance, yeah. We could give it a Google.
Why don't you give that a Google while I hit us with another one?
Sure.
Because that's looking kind of good. Not one I've heard of before. We got one here. We don't see them a lot, but we're always glad to see the name. Got one from Video Games and Collectibles at AC Decepticon. Says, hey, Polykill. I just beat Corey Yoon on the PC Engine because I have a big, fat ding-dong.
Whoa.
It also took me a month of trying. Beautiful graphics, no slowdown, smooth gameplay despite the amount of objects on the screen. Never thought I would beat it. That's what she said. You do got a big ding-dong. I'm here to compliment your ding-dong, buddy. Good job.
Yeah. Hell of a ding-dong there, pal. I've always said that about you. Also, 3DS is where you'll find
All right.
3DS. All right. Good job, Joe. Good job having a dog and a big one at that. Up next, we got Dr. Mullet Gaming, formerly Mr. Mullet Gaming. My, how they grow. We've got, he says, hey, Polykill, I'm getting nostalgic and revisiting my first Just Beat It tweet, Mega Man. This time I played the Wily Wars version. This remake looks beautiful and remedies the OG annoyances like knockback and Mega Man's slippery physics. I highly recommend. Also, I guess it fixes the cover art too, which is good.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, good stuff. I mean, I love to see, this is one of my personal favorite squares that we have out there. I love seeing people revisit their first beat tweet just to see what it was, see where they were in life, what they were playing.
You like it since most other everybody else hates it. That's why you like it. You're having some fun making people do their eat their broccoli is what you're enjoying.
You're explaining why I like bingo in general. Yeah. I like it because people hate it. That applies to 75 out of 75 squares.
That is true. I'm with you on that.
We got one here from Brian Saladay.
All right.
Who just beat, a big one, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Although at times I was extremely frustrated by some of the minigames and the harder fights, this game was a delight in its humorous writing, gorgeous regions, and varied combat. So glad this game got such an incredible rebirth. I love to see Saladay pop his little head out of the gopher hole after all this time and be like, guys, I did it. I came out the other side of that rebirth.
I was worried he was sick or moved or something. When he popped back into the Discord, I was like, he's all right.
Yeah.
Coming up for air after some time. All right. Up next, we got Potomax. You know him. Potomax Dev there. He says, Travis. It's a game called Travis. Okay, let's see. He says, Travis. That's me. Travis is a game about a juggler trying to literally and metaphorically juggle. You must tap balls to gain cash and then tap stuff like your mortgage to pay them. Do that while calling people on their birthday to win. Stressful and weird. A lot like me. I appreciate that it's stressful and weird. That's cool, I think. I don't know. Is it? What is it going on?
None of that made any sense at all. But
what did he play it on? I see. Is that like? It looks like a phone game.
It must
be
mobile.
Man, only Potomax.
I get the sense, though, based on the gag that Potomax has going here, that he didn't really care about the game too much because his other game he finished is Two Beats.
Oh, that son of a bitch.
Yeah. Literally, Travi Two Beats, the Travi Two Beats. That's the type of quality that only Potomax can bring.
100%.
Right? Shout outs to the freaking Canadian legend.
Outside the box, always.
Yeah, we love to see it. So he says, in Two Beats, you can only change direction every two beats. Uh-huh. Synchronized with the background music, avoid lasers, and survive for the whole song to win. The beat screen is just black. Not really good or bad, but it was worth it. Again, just cutting to a hard black screen, like, you're done. That is funny.
That is great. All right, well, thank you, Potomax. Thank you to our big beaters out there. We appreciate you, Brainiac and Scotch, and then also Hobbies, too. Good stuff from everyone. Some great beat tweets this time around. I love it.
Yeah, love to see all the fire watches. Love the Potomax. Love that Potomax literally didn't beat anything else. Like, this was his two-week diet of gaming is these two things.
I guess he's been busy, but that's, good for him.
And be sure to tune in for those bonus beats to see if you know, get another beat or two read out there. All right.
Yeah.
So Blink, Burger Champ gave us some homework. He emailed in to the show, and he gave us a task. And I'll go ahead and read this email here. He says, "Howdy, gents. As the now, if you recall, some months ago, Burger Champ had been emailing in a whole lot and kind of threatening to take over Polymedia with his own sort of LLC approach. He's really trying to become the overlord here, and he's talking a little bit of smack in here. So let's get into it here. He says, "Howdy, gents. As the Burger Media empire grows, the inevitable need to modernize into a Jetsons-like super technological future grows. As we grind further toward the increased need for cogs and sprockets, the need for buttons to push to run those machines also increases. And that got me thinking, what are your top five, one or less, button games? Discounting movement with a D-pad or stick, what games do you love that simplify things down to a single input? Or no input at all? I must retire to complete construction on my burger-branded button machine, but I await your responses post-haste. Your future boss, Burger Champ CEO, Burger Media LLC, sent from my iPhone." I like to include that as well. So, per Burgers, you know, if we must bow to his commands here, top five, one button or less games. I think that's an interesting question. It definitely throws some wrinkles in our usual way of thinking around here. I don't think we typically lean toward top five mechanic type type lists. So what's interesting is that your mind immediately goes to something like the Atari or maybe even mobile. Technically no buttons there. Or I also was thinking, like, does mouse and the mouse button count as, I guess that's also a button, but the mouse itself is more of a D-pad. So you got a few areas to hone in on. Did you have any, what did you first think when you read this, and do you have any like caveats or anything unique that you kind of thought about?
I tried to give myself the challenge of choosing games that existed on consoles too. Because personally, not that I would knock anyone for doing it, but I was like, all right, maybe the mobile is a little too easy because there's so many games on mobile that are every mobile game basically would qualify for this.
Right.
But he did say one or less buttons. So my top five ends up being a pretty healthy mix of games that include one button action only and no button actions only. So we'll see as we go.
Interesting. Well, would you like to go first this time around?
I will. And I don't know if this is the inspiration for Burger's question. I'd like to think it is. I know that he's played this before and not many others have. But the one that jumped to my mind right away that I had to put in the number five spot is a game I played in dreams called Press X to Puzzle, which is a sort of like puzzle, almost comedy game, but it's really just showing the creativity of how many different types of puzzles you can make where the only mechanic is pressing the X button. And so there's like 20 something levels and all of them have you pressing X in different contexts, in different ways for different reasons. And it's, you have to kind of like figure out what the puzzle is and how to solve it at the same time. It's like the perfect dreams kind of game, right? Because it's like a half an hour to an hour long. It's super creative. It's like kind of a game jam energy where it like dives deep into one idea. And if I recall, it's done by our boy, our dreams boy, 800 Pixel Gorilla. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. Big shout out to Press X to Puzzle. It's one of my go-to dreams recommendations for anybody that hasn't played it because it's so easy to get into and so clever.
Very smart, man. Another reminder for me to get dreams. Let me go ahead and tattoo that to my arm right now, because I do want to play. I want to play all his stuff before it goes into the ether.
Yeah.
All right. Good recommendation. Not one that I think a lot of people will be thinking about. Good off the wall suggestion. Because mine's super popular. My number five is going to be one everyone's like, "Yep, I thought of that one already." Pac-Man.
No, there you go. That's a great pick.
You're just scooting around. You're just scooping the pellets. You're just D-padding around. You're just going after the ghost and be like, "Oh shit, no, it changed color. Run away from the ghost. Run away, run away, run away." It's fun. It's Pac-Man. Yeah. What can you say about Pac-Man? Pac-Man.
I challenge you to spend 10 more minutes talking about Pac-Man.
Oof. I'm glad I don't have like an Atari 2600 friend channel. Those would be short. The graphics suck. The music sucks. Just run. That's it. Thanks for watching.
You got your top right dot. You got the dot right below that one. And then your third in that column dot. And I can keep going if you need me to.
Yeah. So. Although I should point out the 2600 version is terrible. You should definitely play Pac-Man on any other version but that one.
So my number four, I just don't think counts. But I was like, screw it. I want to put this into a top five. And I want this to be an option for people to play if they're trying to get a game mentioned in the discussion. And I think we could all agree it is two buttons, but you could bend your mind and say it's only one button. It's Donkey Konga, all right?
Mm.
You're just playing bongos, all right? The only thing you're doing is interacting with bongos. This is a little left bongo, a little right bongo, whatever.
Kind of two bongos, yeah. I'm seeing two bongos, but yeah.
But if we just, you know, kind of blur our vision a little bit and it's just bongos, you know, nondescript. It's a single button game. All you're doing is slapping bongos. Everything else is non-controller related. You're clapping your hands, or if you're going for a score, you're screaming into the microphone. You're hitting the sides of the bongos. So I think it's in the spirit of the question in that it is entirely focused around a singular mechanic and a controller device that's just designed to be a big thing you slap.
Yeah. Nice. That isn't off the wall. See, this has got us thinking outside the box, which I appreciate. So
yeah.
Donkey Kong, that's the kind of thing that we want to list here in the top five, just to force the bingo lovers a little bit outside their comfort zone. My number four is Super Monkey Ball.
Hell yeah.
That's good
stuff.
He's got to fucking move that.
Dude.
First of all, how'd that monkey get in that ball? You ever wonder, has anybody ever thought about that part? It seems like torture for that poor monkey.
I've always thought it was a capsule toy that he just lives in there. It's like Toy Story. That's where he wants to be.
He needs to put some pokes and molds on the top so he can breathe. But but I also got to play that with the banana joystick there at MAGFest, and just phenomenal. Also great on GameCube or however you want to play it. But yeah, Super Monkey Ball, just got to move it.
Dude, maybe a perfect game. Just incredible.
Honestly, yeah.
Love it. My number three puzzle game, Baba Is You. All you're doing, you're just pushing words around, dude. Oh. You're just pushing verbs and nouns, trying to make new sentences and stuff. You know, the only buttons you even press in the menu, but you're scooching Bob around. Sometimes you're scooching rocks and lava around. Sometimes you're moving the whole level around. It's just a good time. One of my favorite puzzle games of all time. And as most puzzle games, it really doesn't have much interactivity at all. So in terms of button presses.
I see this come up all the time in the beat tweets, and I've never seen a second of it. I had no idea that it involved words. So you've broadened my horizons.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, block pushing game where the blocks are words a lot of the time.
Good job. All right, my number three, one that everyone's familiar with it, and they're going to be like, why the fuck is this on your list? Minesweeper. you just click them. Yes. You just click them with one button and try not to explode. I love Minesweeper, dude. Just back in my day, we'd be in the computer lab, and that would be either that or like Spider Solitaire would be how we didn't pay attention in computer class. It was fun.
Yeah. No, that's a great game. It's a classic for a reason.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever listed that as a game that I've beaten and how long to beat, but I'm going to go do it right now. I'm going to go tell the world I've beaten Minesweeper. I'm pretty good at it.
You have, and you will again in your life. It's just going to happen. My number two, another puzzle game. This one actually more of a one-button puzzle game. That is The Witness. All you're doing is just walking around and pressing a button to draw lines on panels, but hot damn. Do they make it a ridiculously fun puzzle game out of that one little idea? Mm-hmm. And it is one of my faves, one of my all-time faves. In fact, for a lot of these, I just went onto my backlog where I looked at my five-star games, and I was like, which one of these only require one button? And here we are.
This is a great list. We're doing great.
I agree.
I wonder if we're going to have
great hunks.
We might not have any overlap in this one. Another one where people get 10 great games recommended to them. My number two, Galaga.
Oh, yeah. Hell
just,
yeah.
You're just firing.
I suck at it. I'm barely fired. I get to like wave two and I'm donezo.
Oh man, one time I was just in the zone at MAGFest. I found the perfect cabinet. Everything was great on it. And I made it to like level 33. And I thought that I was like, somebody better come over here and kiss me because I am amazing right now. Do I go tell somebody that I won it? And then when it went out and zoomed at the high score, I was like, I had maybe a quarter of the high score that somebody else had already gotten. I was like, well, I'm still pretty good at it.
Yeah, that's sad. I'm still proud of me. Yeah. Way to go, Draft.
Yeah.
All right. My number one, to ruin your hope that we wouldn't have any overlap, my number one, Super Monkey Ball.
God damn.
I already said it. It's basically a perfect game.
Yeah.
It's one of the few games that I would change nothing about because it is functionally flawless in its execution to do the thing it wants to do. It is so precise. It is so fun. It is so cool. It is so unique. I do not understand why we either don't get new Monkey Ball games or why they like don't know how to make them good anymore. Why they all feel like weird, you know, off-brand versions of Monkey Ball. Unlike the first two.
Can you imagine Super Monkey Ball VR? You just spinning constantly, just throwing up all inside your ball.
Just yakking. I had to play the whole thing with my eyes closed.
Even thinking about it almost made me sick. But yeah, good selection. All right. Yeah. My number one that I know you'll like. I know you're going to like this. Chips Challenge. You just scoot them around. Yeah, you don't got to push any other buttons. You just walk into stuff, and it works amazingly. Mm-hmm. Love that game.
So good. Sometimes you walk into ice skates. Sometimes you walk into fire retardant boots. Mm. It's just good stuff.
It's so good, man. Can't wait to play it on with my Lynx adapter at some point.
Do it.
One day.
Have a good time.
One day.
You earned it.
Man, great game. 9 games. 9 unique, fun, super awesome games that you can add to your bingo list of potential games to play and beat. Good job, us. What do you think, Steve? The good list?
Great list. Great episode. All right. We beat good games. We played good games. We listed good games.
We got a little grumpy in the middle. We might have been hungry. Could be a little tired, but we got a little grumpy, but we're okay.
It's true. Yeah. I need to go get myself a little bit of frozen yogurt to normalize a bit, but I'm good all around.
Awesome. Well, folks, thanks for listening to another episode. That's going to round us out here. Steve, again, folks are depending on you for another Bingo Square. Based on what you're streaming these days, what's coming up?
You know, this upcoming stream, as of when this episode comes out, it'll be in 2 days. It's not actually going to be a game. It's going to be a very special pickups stream. And I don't want to spoil it before the big dramatic reveal, but I will say that I will not be alone, and it's pickups with a twist.
Oh, my gosh. Well, now I'm super excited. What day is that one?
Thursday, April 18th.
Thursday, April 18th, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. Be there, be square.
Hell yeah.
All right, man. Good stuff. Well, folks, that's going to do it here. You can check us out on every link in the show notes. Click all of them, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.